07090 90 973.
Nick Abbott.
Hello, boys.
Ian Lee is ill.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Apparently he's setting new emetic records. Pouring out of him, it is. Awful. Poor boy. So he's in bed with well, I don't really know. A bucket, probably, by the side of his bed, which may or may not be full. Does he have people ministering to him?
I don't believe so. But I think he's got a cold.
What?
I gave it to him last week. Or it's all my fault that you're in today.
A cold?
Yeah. They're quite bad colds.
Yeah, right. They're bad if you're a man and weak, like we men are. Isn't that right, Helen?
It is.
Yeah. I'm surprised it doesn't say flu. Because every time that a man sneezes, oh, I've got the flu. Near death, I am. Near death experience. I'm having right now, they'll say.
What's the difference between a flu and a cold?
I don't know. Is it the same as the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
I don't know what that difference is.
You're kidding. You don't know the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
Give me a few minutes and I'll work it out.
Have you been to school? Oh, come on. You don't know the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
What? Do you watch
the planet Earth? Are you familiar with, what's-his-name's work? That's not helpful, is it? What's-his-name? You know, what? The bloke who they hoik up a tree every now and again to whisper over.
Attenborough.
And these ants are crawling up there.
Oh, the fox man.
Attenborough.
Oh, another guy.
Who's the fox man?
On Bill Oddie.
Oh, right.
He whispers all the time. We're looking at a fox.
There's something about Bill Oddie that's just...
Odd.
Yes. So Ian has not got a cold. It must be something more serious than that. Come on.
He's bunking off.
Bunking off. There's a phrase I haven't heard in a good long while. What, round the back of the bike sheds having a fag, is he?
Yeah.
Does he not know that it's double geography on a Monday? That's probably why
followed
he's bunking
by,
off, right.
Followed by double math.
Yeah. And then a double football outside, which is always the worst. Wednesday afternoon was double games. Oh, no wonder I... After a while, when I attended my new school, because I went to Essex in a comprehensive, and double games was always out on the playing fields. You remember when schools had playing fields, of course? Mm. Yeah, before the government sold them all off to make luxury executive flatlets. Mm. We'd be out there, we might as well have been on the North Pole, freezing it was, in our tiny little nylon shorts. Oh, and the games master, of course, was covered in fleece from head to toe there. Football was not really my thing, and so I'd hug the lines of the football field where no action would be seen and try and blend in with the surroundings so that people wouldn't notice me and wouldn't kick the ball in my direction. And I was extremely successful in this regard, to the point that I actually got no exercise at all, standing there for an hour and a half on a February morning with the wind whistling through my teeth. Helen has her hand up.
Did you blend in with all the blonde trees around you?
Anyway, back to my story. And so I was so cold to the point that when I went back to the changing room to change, you know, which is what they use that room for, my hands were so frozen cold that I couldn't actually do up my shirt. So I went home in February while it was snowing with my shirt open, as though I were hard. You know, like someone who comes from Newcastle, for instance, who seemed to be absolutely packing the tubes. I noticed this on Saturday, and I mentioned this on Saturday night. I normally am in a Siberia Slots showcase on Saturday night, and I've been bussed here at last minute's notice in order to fill in for Ian, who's at home with a sniffle, according to his chum through the glass there. That can't be it. Must be more serious than that.
Well, I had a day off last week because of the sniffle.
Yeah, but you're not important. Ian is important. He's this side of the glass.
Oh.
Anyway, yes, don't go into the tube in central London, because my day job is nothing like this, and I have to get in there on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and, oh, struth, going through the West End on the Piccadilly line is a nightmare, because all these people that are obviously from the north, or outside of London, generally, are pouring onto the tube. And you can tell them a mile off, because they all look like they're having such fun, as opposed to the hatchet-faced, grim Londoners who are staring at the floor and muttering and as though they want their lives to end, or at least the, everyone that's surrounding them's lives to end. But people who have just come in for the day, they look happy and are talking to each other on the tube. So it marks them out as foreigners right away. And the other thing that is really noticeable about people who don't live in London on the tube is that, uniquely, they look healthy. They have a glow about them, as though they are sons of the earth, as though they toil for a living. You know, they have a ruddy complexion, whereas everyone that lives in London looks like they're close to death. And you only really notice this when you get an influx of out-of-towners, or you leave to go on holiday elsewhere, and then you come back. If you look around on the tube and actually look at people, I think it must be the tube that's doing it to us. I think it's killing us slowly, because everyone has this sort of waxy face and this glum demeanour, as though they're dying more rapidly than they ordinarily would do, just because they're travelling on the tube. And it's all Red Ken's fault.
What a way to go, though.
Yeah, awful. But I do think that there is actually something wrong with the tube. I think it is actually killing us. And you'll notice that that's true because Londoners who travel the tube every day look as though they're close to death, as opposed to people who are talking in loud Scottish accents or Liverpudlian accents or whatever it is they've come down on the coach from, who look as though they just have a bit of life about them. People from Kensington and Chelsea, they look ruddy and they live to be 120 because they never travel on the tube. Wouldn't even dream of it.
They're in their 4x4s.
Exactly. That's the smallest carriage they see. It looked like you were about to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that, actually, I was on the tube on Saturday night, and must have been about 5 or 6 people who were just sleeping. They could have been dead, so I think your theory could well be true.
Yeah, dropping like flies they are.
Exactly.
And it's the Mayor of London that's doing it to us.
Well, we don't know that.
No, probably not. Not actually him. But Transport for London, anyway.
Yeah, that big giant...
What?
Transport for London.
Big giant. Big giant. Transport for London is a big giant transport from London. For London. Is that what you said?
It's a big giant.
Is this the
beast,
standard of help that you normally give Ian?
Yeah.
This is why he's taken the day off. Just couldn't stand it.
Probably.
Couldn't face it on a Monday. Quite right, too.
Yeah.
This Sorry, is the level is of what, assistance.
Well, this is what you've got for the next few hours. Sorry.
Let's have our first call in Twickers, and it's a lady called Anne. Oh, Anne. Anne. Right, is there something that I've done wrong? Fader is up. Phone one, fader up.
Just check for you now.
Checking for me. Go ahead. Take all the time you like. It's a live show. I'll just whistle. What shall we whistle, Helen? Let's whistle, Let's do something simple like I Love You.
No, I've got a song going around in my head.
I Love You,
Joy
Helen.
In My
Don't touch
Heart.
Me. I'll kill you.
Pardon?
Do you know Give Me Joy In My Heart?
No. Sorry. What's up?
Let me just check.
Yeah, checking, things. Checking, stroking his beard. Got no idea. He's just stabbing buttons wildly. He's got no clue.
Is the fader there?
It's the fader.
Does it say phone one?
Yes, it does, yeah. Go on, then you try.
I'm trying. Hang on.
Anne wants to talk to me about bananas. That's got to be important.
Can you hear us, Anne?
Hey, Ian, you can relax, mate. It's going very well.
Can you hear us, Anne?
We can't even get anybody on the phone. So I'll be doing a monologue for the next 3.5 hours. Maybe she's hung up. Did that occur to you?
Oh, maybe. But what? Okay, can I try on that one? Should we work on that one?
Oh, Anne.
Hello.
Hey, Anne.
Oh, hello.
Where did you go, dear?
I was here all the time. I heard you discussing buttons and God knows what.
You were screaming plaintively in the dark. I'm here, you were shouting.
No, only a couple of times. Then I thought I mustn't overdo it. You know, I thought maybe you didn't want me to speak.
Of course I want you to speak.
No,
but
I wasn't.
You know what? I'm going to have to...
What?
I'm going to have to ask you to hang on to that thought. Right. Sure. Make a little note and I'll come back to you in a moment, all right?
Fair enough, okay.
Because we've got some business to take care of.
Okay.
Okay, Anne. You don't mind just waiting there a moment, do you?
Not at all, no.
What a nice lady. This is LBC 97.3. I'm Nick Abbott in for Ian Lee. And let's have Travel with Amanda Redmond.
On the M25, the traffic lights aren't working.
Hello, Anne.
Oh, hello, yeah. I was going to talk about bananas. I will get on to that. But you talking about bunking off from games reminded me, we're going back 40 years now. I was at Chiswick Polytechnic, right? I'm a West London girl. And my friend and I bunked off once. We used to go down to Chiswick. Where did we go for games?
I don't know.
Down by the river in Duke's Meadows, that's where it was.
Oh, Duke's Meadows, yeah. Where's
yeah.
That?
I didn't mind games. I've always been lively. I can still run very fast, funnily enough. But it doesn't bother me. But we just...
That's not a euphemism, is it, Anne? Lively. So.
It could be. I'm single, so it's all right to say that, isn't
right,
it? I keep
I
saying
so.
I'm single because I was a very faithful married woman. Right. We must have been about... I was there from 13 to 18, 19, so let's call us 17. And we were getting a bit fed up with this games, you know, once a week. And we went to Soho, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. Walker's Court was where, it's a tiny, it's hardly a road, it's a passage, where Raymond's Review Bar was. A couple of shops past that was a shoe shop, and she bought a pair of winkle pickers. They were the longest winkle pickers I've ever seen. And we had a stroll around and then we went home. But I did know Soho quite well because my dad had a shop not far away in the other side of Regent Street, but I used to run into Soho to get his sandwiches and stuff, you know, on Saturdays or during the holidays. But I've always liked Soho. I still roam up there from time to time.
Oh, for a quick roam.
Oh, no! Yeah. that sounds bad, doesn't it? No, I still go to Notting Hill because, funnily enough, my mother, where you are, was where my mother's family came from, North Kensington, the poor end.
Oh, is this what this area is called? North Kensington?
That is the correct
That's
term, North Kensington,
isn't it?
Because I've said that on I think Bill Buckley asked
it
once.
Might as well be South Hampstead. Estate agent speak,
No,
is
no,
it?
No. It's always been North Kensington.
Right.
Because the Bayswater Road was the dividing line. South Kensington and North Kensington. The women of North Kensington took in the washing and did the work for the... And a couple of my aunties were in service in South Kensington.
I don't think I'd give the women around here my clothes to...
Oh, don't you get funny. You won't be able to walk out of that place.
I always look both ways when I open the door, that's for sure.
You've been listening to Bill Buckley, haven't you?
No.
No, that was terrible
about
him.
I'm usually asleep, having just done a show prior to him.
Didn't you know that... I know, but didn't you know that Bill was attacked some time ago?
I did not know that.
No? No, I'm not joking. He was attacked. I think it was he came out of Latimer Road Station. Yeah.
Oh, not leaving this building?
No, he was on his way.
Right.
To work. Oh, yeah.
What a great start to the working day that is.
Horrendous. Oh, no. It shook him up. No question. I mean, it was...
And did he do a show afterwards?
I think he was off a few days, but everybody was very supportive. And quite a few taxi drivers phoned in, offered him free rides. And, I mean, I know it wasn't funny, obviously, you know. But
you're
quite...
laughing, though, Anne.
I'm laughing in a nervous way.
Oh,
you know how you do.
Yeah.
Right, on to bananas.
You being so lively and all. Yeah,
exactly. Right, well, bananas. I read a Victorian book once, and this is typical of the time. Ladies, I can't remember the exact wording, but ladies shouldn't peel and eat a banana in their hand. It should be peeled. Ladies should peel it and cut it with a knife and fork.
Right, you know why that is.
Considered indecent,
yeah.
Of course. Well,
filthy.
Well, exactly, because I tend to pick up a banana very quickly on my way out, and if a woman's standing at a bus stop eating a banana, you can bet your life with no bad intentions, but
no, what's she gonna say?
Van drivers always come by and bib, and me having such
they're probably hungry, Anne.
Possibly, yeah, but for what? I mean, they're dirty men, aren't they?
A nibble.
Anyway, I'm going to pop out now. I've got to go to Twickenham and then to Hammersmith. So I'll phone another day, right?
And
Tally and Lee.
Itinerary for the day. And what?
I was going to say, Ian Lee, he's bound to be listening. Get out of bed and get back into work. What was he doing Sunday night to keep him in bed today?
I don't know, Chris. What was he doing on Sunday night to keep him in bed today? He was working.
Yeah, he was working last night.
Oh, was he? Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's what he said. Where?
Here.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a little show, you know.
No. He was doing it all day, wasn't he?
Does and the radio as well.
Yeah, because I was listening to Bill much later. Right, okay. All right, well, I'll let you go, and it's a great show.
Thanks, Anne.
And I shall keep listening for a bit, okay?
Oh, cheers.
Bye.
How does she know it's a great show? She's the only thing that's been on it so far. Maybe that's what she meant. The bits that she's been on, she loved those bits. Let's have Winchmore Hill. Oh, Marion.
Oh, hello.
Marion.
Yes, I was just calling to say Ian does not enjoy good health.
He does not enjoy good health?
No, he does not.
Is he one of these guys that moans about
good
health?
Well, I'm
not
saying anything, but generally Monday, throat or stomach, or it may run into Tuesday. He doesn't have a happy life.
He sounds happy enough on the air, though, Marion.
Oh yes, but not his health. Not poor soul. No, right. No.
Is that true, Chris? Is he often poorly?
Pardon? Yes, Monday.
How should I say this?
They throat and stomach, generally.
Right.
He's not blessed with health.
No, God help us, he's not.
Is he like, I don't know, well, a polite way of saying this, was he the runt of the litter?
Well, I don't know, he seems to enjoy bad health, poor devil.
Right. Probably doesn't enjoy it, mind.
Well, I'm not saying that.
I mean, not enjoy it one of those
I
old...
I know what I'm saying.
One of those old dears that sits on a bus, and the first thing they'll say to you is how old they are. I'm 86! And then the second thing they'll say is the latest medical procedure. Detailing it graphically for you, they will. And then he took this plunger, and guess what he did with that?
Well,
and on and on they'll go,
on
unbidded.
Monday.
You what?
That's how he sounds on a Monday, generally, and Tuesday. His throat or his stomach is at him.
Right. Well, I think the contents of his stomach are bypassing his throat.
I don't want to hear about it, thank you very much. No.
I'll draw you a picture and send it in the post. All right, Marion.
Thank you very much. But also, I'd like to say that if it's a cold he has this time, right, if it is, men, I don't know, why is it they act like they're dying when they have a cold? I never understand it.
Well, the colds affect men in a very serious way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Women can just breeze through it because it doesn't affect them in the same way. Yeah.
Because they have to. They have families and children to take care of.
Yeah, but we have our...
Nothing to do. Then go to work and come in and sit down.
And moan and complain and where's my drink, we'll say. Men are awful. We make me sick.
I like men. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Men have their use.
They have the use, yeah. Where would we be without them?
Have I heard you before on this programme?
But Marion, how on earth would I know the answer to that?
Well, I don't know. What is your name again? I don't believe I've heard you before.
My name's Nick Abbott.
No,
comically, my parents called me Nicholas Abbott. They didn't really think that through, did they?
Well, I don't know. It's all right. I don't mind it.
Oh, right.
Okay.
I'll stick with it, then.
I've heard you before, but it was nice talking to you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Marion.
It's all right.
Are you all right?
Yes, thank you, I am. It was nice speaking to you.
Okay, ta-ta.
Bye-bye.
What a nice lady. She was concerned. Is it true that Ian often takes Mondays off?
No, but we're usually quite tired because we were in the night before till 1 o'clock.
Tired?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's not like we're working for a living here.
Oh, you can be still tired, though.
It's just mental exhaustion. It's not like you're actually working at the pit face.
Yeah, but I think mental exhaustion is worse than physical exhaustion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's a certain feeling of accomplishment when you are physically exhausted. When you come in and you fall asleep on the bus, you're so tired in your stained work clothes. And people are avoiding you like the plague because you smell, because you've been toiling all day long.
Yeah.
And you come in and you shower it all off, and then you wolf down food as though it were the last meal you're ever going to be presented with. Yeah. There's a certain satisfaction about that, and then you fall asleep by 8, because you have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be on the building site for 6.
Yeah.
And he's saying yes, like he's actually experienced this. Come in here and show me your hands. You've never done a day's work in your life, boy.
They're the softest hands in the world.
Exactly.
What's taxing about Triple M? Because it's called Straight to Air.
Yeah.
You just sit there and do that.
But because it's called Straight to Air, you have to...
He doesn't get paid for that show, does he?
Yeah. I don't. But, you have to listen really, really intently, just so that nothing... no
untoward
swear words go out or
air,
loud bus
right.
or anything like that.
No, I used to do something like that, and it is a bit, because it's very full on and very fast, and you can't relax for a moment.
Exactly.
We hear, I mean, people will scoff, naturally, people who actually work for a living, will think that people like me and Ian have got a life of a Riley. They think that we do precious little, and mostly they're right. But, crucially, the difference between us and people who go to work for 8 hours a day is that we have a concentrated 3 hour spell. Whereas a normal person, you're going to work and you'll spend the first half hour hanging up your coat and eyeing up the person in the office that you fancy and seeing if you can go and make a cup of tea in order to rub shoulders with them. And you're not doing anything for at least the first hour. And then there's the hour for lunch, and then there's the hour after that staring out the window. So you'd, in an 8 hour day, you're probably working actually flat out for, what, an hour? And so we really, in a 3 hour show, are working what most are doing mentally, what most people would get through over almost the course of a week.
What nonsense!
I was wondering when someone was going to stop me. Is it travel now? It's travel here on LBC 97.3 after the ads, and we'll be back.
It's always a good idea to get an expert opinion.
London's LBC 97.3.
Hello.
90909973.
Nick Abbott.
Oh, hey, Dennis.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
I am all right, mate.
I think I've lost the will to live.
Good. It's you and Ian both, apparently.
No, actually, but I thought you'd make a change. Anyway, you
make a change. What does that mean? Hang on a minute. What does that mean? Make a change.
He drives me mad.
Oh, it's a positive thing. Oh,
absolutely.
I thought this was a complaint. I thought you'd been hanging on the line for the last half an hour just in order to abuse me.
But no, I wouldn't abuse you. Not in front of all these listeners.
Don't abuse Ian either. He does a tremendous job. Every time I come on here, it's like, which is ridiculous because everyone, I mean, the audience figures are proof alone. But every now and again, someone slips through the net and all they want to do is moan. Moan, 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 they go. Anyway, back to you, Dennis.
Right, you asked the question, what's the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
All right, I'll set it up. Hey, Dennis, what's the difference between a buffalo and a bison?
Is you can't wash your hands in a buffalo.
Correct, yeah. Is that the first time you've heard that, Chris? Surely not.
Yeah, I think it's my age.
Right. How old are you?
26.
Hmm. It's a bit of a nothing age, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got to wait 4 years until I'm 30.
Yeah, until you're all grown up. Yeah, you can't wash your hands in a
buffalo.
Right.
Old joke.
Very old, yeah. One of those.
Even older than me.
One of those really unfunny old jokes, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Enjoy your show.
Ta-ta. Hey, I was going to Earl's Court last night, and your favourite, Helen, George Michael, had just thrown out.
No.
Huh?
He's not my favourite.
Yeah. He's your favourite?
No. Favourite what?
George Michael.
Singer? Random person?
Let's go with singer, shall we?
Go on.
Yeah. Your singer, your favourite singer...
Yes.
...is George Michael. You totally look like a George Michael fan, don't you?
And what do they look like?
Well, they look like, the daughters of the people that were on the tube have been just bussed down from Newcastle. All ruddy-faced they were.
Oh, stop that.
Huh?
Stop that.
But they look like they'd had a really average time, actually. Although, I suppose, how do you look when you just come out of a concert? Because you expend all your energy in there, and then you're plumb jiggered out, like they used to say in the Wild West. I just wonder how it went. No, of course I wasn't there.
You were just driving past when the gig was coming out.
Do I look like a secretary? No, I was on the tube.
Oh.
Did you want to be there?
No, just going through Earl's Court. And they were clutching their giant programmes to their breasts. And they were all, it was almost all girls. Almost all, totally, exclusively girls of, I'd say about, not girls actually, women of about 30. And with a few boyfriends who had obviously been pulled along against their wishes, who looked miserable while the girls were still chatting away and looking at their little programmes and, oh, there he is. So I just wonder how it went, because he got a 4-star review in the Standard tonight. Because how many times has that guy's career been reportedly over by various...
4 times.
How many?
4.
Can you enumerate them for me, please?
Wham. Then, the police incident, that's 2.
Oh, he recorded with the police, did he? I had no idea.
No, there was an incident with the police.
Yeah, sting.
Which I don't know what that was about. And then another incident, quite recently, where he was slumped over, he was found asleep at the car.
Yeah, I think
wheel.
I know what that is.
That's three.
Shall I say it on the air? No.
No.
It's... No. I don't mind.
You don't mind?
No.
Well, check with our lawyers. Here's one in Hammersmith. Hello, Jonathan.
Oh, hello, Nick. Are you all right?
I am all right.
It's funny hearing that expression, jiggered, because I come from the Wild Southwest, and I remember people used to say that, but not if they were tired, if they were annoyed, or a little bit irritated, we'll all be jiggered.
I thought it was tired, because plum jiggered, whatever that means, why the two words go together, I've got no idea. I thought that was just, I'm plum jiggered, tired.
Yeah, that's probably American, but seriously, I can remember hearing, but, you know, if, say, somebody pulled out in front of me suddenly... Then at home, you'd say, this ain't Cornwall, you'd say, oh, I'll be jiggered, you know, I'll be jiggered. What's he playing at? Do you know what I mean?
In Cornwall?
Yeah, Cornwall's different to America.
As you're sitting on your cart being led by your donkey.
That's exactly right, Nick. Out you bed. I used to drive horse and cart many a time when I was living back home. The other expression that you used was Riley, which always tickles me, because I never quite know... I know what it means, life of Riley, but who was Riley? Do you know where it comes from?
I do not, Jonathan, but someone's bound to.
To ring out and tell you.
Yeah.
And the other one was the bananas that Anne was talking about. She's usually talking about sausages, it was not bananas. And was it true, when they first came over, people used to eat them with the skins on? So seriously, this is what I heard. When they first came over, we didn't know how to eat them. Have you not heard that?
No, I have not, no. But apparently it's National Banana Day or some rubbish like that, because there was a little... Oh, Helen's looking, there's got her eyes just went to the ceiling. Oh, she went.
Oh, what, really? Am I being the too naughty? Should I keep it down a bit?
No, not at all. Britons get through 3 billion bananas a year, apparently. Yes, we have no bananas. We've eaten them all. The women eat the most, a survey showed. Why would you conduct a survey... about bananas. I don't get it. Well, crucially, it doesn't say, because usually when people conduct surveys, it's to get their name in the paper without having paid the advertising rates.
But if we're consuming 3 billion bananas a year, shouldn't it be Banana Week? We should dedicate a whole week to the banana.
Well, apparently Monday is Banana Day. Top Banana Munching Day. This one right here. Monday, yeah.
Oh, I never knew. I've just been listening to the radio. I've really heard... Well, I heard news, but I haven't heard this mentioned at all. I'll have to go home and get a banana then and eat one just in commemoration. I don't mind one now and then, but I must admit, I find them a bit, if they're too ripe, a bit sickly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
All right, well, just wait till they're just yellow. All right, yellow with black spots.
Yeah, just right. And then with a little bit, you know, when I was in Cornwall, I used to have it with Cornish clotted cream. My gran used to do this. Cornish clotted cream... and sugar and milk, and it makes a nice dessert.
Yeah, I think that's what Ian is actually suffering from right now. Ruining the day ever went that way.
No, he called British gold, didn't he? He called British gold, I think.
So 1% of people eat the banana with the skins on, and 32% eat them sideways, nibbling them like hamsters they do. All right, thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Cheers, Nick.
Ta-ra. For whatever it was that he called about. What did he call about? It was a very long conversation. We've got no idea what it was about. Anyway, Ian is off today for reasons that we haven't actually got to the bottom of. Chris, you're his chum. You must have spoken to him.
I'm pretty sure it's the cold I gave him last week.
It's not a cold. How can it possibly be a cold?
They're pretty serious things.
Yeah, right.
I was in bed all day on Wednesday.
With a cold?
Yeah.
That is pathetic.
But the thing is, it was justified because, you know, working in a radio station, you don't want to spread your germs.
That's a very good point. You know, when we all start dying of bird flu, I think I think that's the moment in which I will retire. Because, you know, is it that important that you want to risk dying on the tube coming into work?
Mm.
No. Oh. And this thing here, forgive me while I tap it, this microphone here is covered in what is basically a... germ collector, isn't it? Big fuzzy thing that people are spitting in. Not actually, you know, comically spitting in as we used to do in saloons. But the air that's coming out your mouth, awful.
And you just touched it.
Ick. Yeah, I did. I touched it with my fingers. And a little later on, I'll be putting my fingers,
up your nose.
In all sorts of places that better not even go into. Hey, Philip.
Good afternoon, Nick.
How are you?
Very well, and you?
I am super. Thanks for asking.
Right, before I make my main point I rang in for, Nick, I had a bison burger in near Mount Rushmore.
A bison burger?
Yeah. It was, we went round the Custer State Park, and then we finished up at Mount Rushmore, went to the restaurant. On the menu was bison burgers, so I thought I'd try one.
Is that the same restaurant that they used in North by North?
That's right, yes. I'm not sure.
What are you, psychic? This isn't Friday night. How did you know the question before I even answered
it? I guess what was coming.
Right.
I'm not sure whether they recreated it, Nick, because it looks smaller in the film. But, I mean, that was all years and years ago. So it could well have been then. But, yes, it's a very good recreation of the actual place where old Cary Grant and Eva Maria Saint were.
I can't get my head around Mount Rushmore. How did they do that?
It's much smaller, Nick, than when you see it. You think it's going to be really, really big, but it's a lot smaller.
Well, how... define small.
Well, you think the heads... When you see that... Whenever you see a picture of the heads...
Yeah, they're as big as a mountain.
Yeah, well, they are big, but they're... there are lots... Let's say that when you see it, you think, my, that's small. It's really... I don't know when it's the way photographs are taken these days, but... They look a lot smaller.
Probably technology.
Yeah, they've got another one there, the Crazy Horse, which is much, much bigger.
What's that?
It's a head of Crazy Horse.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's just as good as Mount Rushmore. They've recreated this head of Crazy Horse at the side of a mountain, and they're still working on it.
Crazy Horse? What,
yeah,
the
Indian chief.
Oh, not the band that Neil Young plays
with. No. The reason I rang, Nick...
Yes.
They've done a survey in America on how to beat the flu bug.
A survey?
Yes. What they did, they asked a number of people, it doesn't say how many people, and asked them, how do you beat the flu bug? 2% said that they drink orange juice. 12% said they take vitamins. 25% said getting a flu shot would help them. But what was the top answer, Nick? 61% of people said this was how the best way to protect from the flu.
Well, you want me to guess now?
You have a guess.
Booze. Man. Getting drunk.
No.
A pint of cider always makes me feel better.
Oh, it does me.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Whether I've got the flu or not, come to think of it.
Medium sweet.
Medium sweet?
Yes.
No, medium sweet for the lady.
No. I mean, in this country, it's all dry. But I like medium sweet.
Right.
So what do you think it was, Nick?
Well, I'm just trying to think.
Yeah.
To beat the flu, how about exercise?
No.
Sexercise?
No.
I give in.
Well, it's something you do, how can I say? Right, when you go to the toilet...
Oh, no.
You do something after you've been to the toilet. What do you do?
Spray air freshener?
No.
Brush my teeth?
No.
Wash my hands?
Yes.
Wash my hands?
People, yeah, that's what they said. 61% of the people asked said that they thought the best way to beat the flu was to wash their hands.
All right, but I've got to go right now, Philip, but thanks for the news, all right. Wash your hands, Ian, you dirty boy. Here's Travel with Amanda Redman.
Well, we still have those...
Let's have one in Muswell Hill. Hello, Kenny.
Muswell Hill. Hello, Nick. How are you?
I am all right.
Jolly good. Yeah, I went to see George Michael last night. It was cool.
Were you forced?
Sort of, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm taking that as a yes. Yeah,
yeah. It was a fantastic show. It really was. A great concert.
Huh.
He'd put, supposedly 15 million of his own money into the actual stage itself.
15 million?
Yeah, this is supposedly what he said on the radio last week. I heard him on the radio, and he said he spent £15 million of his own money on the actual stage. The graphics and the lighting, it was fantastic, it really was. A bit controversial, though, at times, I must say. One of the songs that he brought out, I think, a few years ago was Shoot the Dog.
Yeah, I've heard about that, the blow-up doll of a dog doing something it shouldn't to the President of the United States.
Don't tell us.
You don't tell us.
No, I won't say, but he had a great big inflatable George Bush. When he was actually singing that song, towards the end of it, he had a great big inflatable George Bush.
Yeah, I know. I just said that.
Oh, you did? Oh, you...
And it was something rude was going on with it, yeah.
It was, exactly,
but
yeah.
Don't tell us.
I won't tell you what it was, but you can obviously guess.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, great show. Fantastic. I've always wanted to see George Michael, and he was on top form.
It says in the Standard that he went on for 2.5 hours.
He was a bit late coming on. He was a bit late coming on, but
well, he's probably fallen asleep in the car on the way there.
Well, there was some of them, yeah, something like that. At Marble Arch at the traffic lights, or he couldn't get away at Manchester East or something like that. But no, it was a fantastic show. It was really good.
Huh? And what did he end with?
Freedom.
Right. Well, that's a pretty good end.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Did he do this one?
Not quite.
Not that one. How about? Not that one either?
Not that one either, no. No, not that one.
Alright. Okay, well, thanks for the good news, Kenny.
Thanks for that, mate.
Alright, ta-da. And remember, you can't say happiness without saying penis. Here's one in Worthing. Oh, Charles.
Good afternoon.
Charles.
How are you?
I'm super.
I think we've spoken before. In the middle of the night, I think it was.
Oh, right.
And I hear my friend's got a cold.
Well, that's what Chris is saying. I think it must be more serious than that.
When you see him, tell him I said I don't believe him because he won't believe me when I say I can play a piano.
Do you have a piano?
Yeah. Want to hear it?
Do you have a piano right there, right now?
I'm sitting here now.
All right, well, any requests in there about what we'd like to hear?
Well, it's fine, no. It's only the old stuff, you know, not this modern...
Right. Helen?
Xanadu.
Xanadu.
Olivia Newton-John, please.
Oh, come on.
What, you said any requests?
I'm talking about the 20s.
Yeah, a tune that you can whistle.
T for two.
T for two, well, Charles.
Let me play a bit of it.
Wish we had an arsenal.
Wake me up before you go-go.
Charles, it sounds like there's a cat crawling all over your piano. We're going to have to pay for this, aren't we?
You won't be able to stop him now.
Fortunately, he's put the phone down. And he's back.
What?
No. So, Charles, are you going to play the piano for us?
Oh, don't play that.
Don't muck about. That was, well, it was... Oh, God, he's gone off again. That was, it was like walking into a Wild West bar.
Yeah. I'm still here. Oh, you could hear me?
Yeah, it was loud and clear. It was as though someone was...
Ask me another one.
Someone was cleaning your instrument.
Yeah, ask for another one, come on. But I've got the volume too much, have I?
Well, let's see if we can just squeeze one more in. All right, so, it will be, how about...
That's Waller?
No. What's that seaside one? Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. All right, give us that one now.
It's hard to play on here, but I will do it.
Here we go. Oh, no, we've run out of time on that call. I hate when that happens. There's one in England, Chris. England.
That's what he told me.
Hello, Solomon.
Hello, Nick.
How are you?
How are you?
I am great, mate.
So am I, mate. Listen, I wanted to speak to you again, because I know I spoke to you when you were covering for Clive Bull one night.
Yeah.
About this, you know, letting us eccentrics through, unvetted. I know you don't like the idea.
Doing what?
Letting off the centrics through, you know, during the Triple M. Letting off the centrics on being unvetted, you know.
Letting off the centrics?
Eccentrics.
Yeah. Eccentrics.
Eccentrics?
Eccentrics, yeah, nutters.
Oh, the nutters. Oh, well, you should have said nutters, he meant.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a bit polite saying this.
Yeah.
A little bit more polite.
I think eccentrics are posh, nutters are, have the same, actions, but they just haven't got any money, yeah.
That's the way, yeah. Listen, so what do you think, you know, you really just go with the flow with it and try and enjoy it tonight?
Oh, you mean after six?
After six.
I'm going to do something a little more structured than that, and it will be, because it is the season to be merry, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, I thought I'd do a lightning round, which is just you finish the sentence, and it's I want. You know, it's like a Santa's wish list. I'll start you off. I want goodwill to all men and peace on earth. How's that?
That's not bad.
That makes me sound very caring, doesn't it?
Very caring.
Yeah, I read it off a card. That will be what I'll do between the 6 and 6.30. You just finish the sentence, I want. And naturally, there will be a prize that Chris will come up with. Won't you, Chris?
Yeah,
Yeah.
What, is that a no?
Well, I'll rummage around in the office and see what I can find.
There'll be a prize for the best one. I bet you're virtually beside yourself with excitement, Solomon.
Well, yeah, I'll have to jump out my cab and jump in the air with glee.
Are you a back cabbie?
I certainly am, sir.
Did you read in the paper today, the hardest job in this country is to be a black cab driver in London?
It is.
No, it isn't.
It is.
Oh, well, you should have said. It is, he said.
It is. I'm a black cabbie. I know. It is.
Well, I'm not a black cabbie, but I would wager that it isn't. And I'll get into this in just a moment. All right. Are those cabs comfortable to drive?
The newer ones are not bad, but they're not very reliable. But they are,
yeah, which is why cabbies are irritated all the time. It's
all
because
the time, yeah.
It's really hard to wield those things around. But anyway, thanks a lot, Solomon. I'll get into into the manner of your business in a moment. This is LBC. Now for the...
London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
This is another one of these surveys that people do in order to get the names of their companies in the paper without having to spend any money on advertising.
Very clever.
Driving a black cab in London is Britain's most difficult job, research claimed yesterday.
I don't believe it.
What rubbish. Have you ever heard anything like it in your life? Discovery Channel research... See, I've fallen victim to their evil plan. I've read out their name on the air without even thinking about it. I did it.
And I'm sure you'll read it again.
Well, I'm going to have to start at the beginning of that sentence again now. Discovery Channel researchers, for a show called Hard Labour, considered the likelihood of accidental death or injury, the working hours, the skill levels, and the stress. You listen to this, Solomon?
I'm listening intently.
A spokesman said, London is a stressful city. Is it? And navigating dangerous roads all day is seriously underestimated.
It certainly is.
I've never heard the like in my life. Do you know what the next most dangerous job is?
Is it a fisherman trawler, is it?
Yes. Working on a Scottish trawler in the North Sea is less dangerous than being a black cab driver. Oh, come on.
Well, I suppose the fish ain't going to come out and attack you, or taking them the wrong way round, I suppose.
Have you been attacked lately?
A couple of times. I mean, one guy tried to get through the screen a few weeks ago, because I missed his turning. Very, very drunk, all three of them.
Were you?
And threatened to tear my head off and do something with it.
You know what the third most dangerous job is? Chopping trees in the Great Yorkshire Forest. Why specifically there, I've no idea. And the fourth is drilling for oil off the coast of the Shetlands. More dangerous than all of those is being a black cab driver. I think the only danger in being a black cab driver is hauling around the giant sums of money that you're fleecing us for.
Well, people think that, you know, we earn loads and loads of money. Yeah, I mean,
here we go.
They don't realise that our vehicles take 60% of our income to keep these on the road and, you know, absolutely heavy costs.
60%?
60%.
Well, none of it goes in cleaning, does it?
Well, no. Not my one today, anyway. But, you know, it's people think, you know, we make large sums of money and we
huge.
Stick it all in our back pocket.
Yeah.
Well, to tell the truth, my pockets ain't big enough.
Right.
It's, you know, for the job we do...
I'll send you a man bag in the post, all right?
I'll have one. But it is a dangerous job. I mean, the night work is, you know, it can be a bit perilous. Some of the people you pick up, you know.
Yeah, they're desperately trying to stay awake, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, can I tell you a story, Nick?
I wish we had time, mate. But call us up on another day, all right?
Okay then, mate.
Cheers.
Good luck.
Another unsatisfied customer. And him doing the world's most dangerous job and all. So, that's what I'll come out with the news with. What is the most dangerous job that you have ever done? Because I've had a couple, and I've found myself doing them, thinking, what am I doing here? Crazy person that I am. So we'll list those after the news.
London's LBC 97.3.
Yeah.
0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Right, so what we doing?
Haven't spoken to her in ages. How's she doing?
Who was that?
Gibbon. Or Carol McGiffin, as she's known.
Oh, good, I think. Yeah, good.
I call her Gibbon because we used to do a show when LBC was under a previous management. We used to do a show, a long time ago in a place far, far away when it used to be up by Guardian.
Atien.
Yeah, that's right. We were sequestered down in the basement. You know, bad behaviour, I think. And someone wrote in, because Carol and I used to do a show on Saturday night, and someone wrote, which was, you know, at odds with the entire, the rest of the output of the station at that time. And some nice lady wrote in and said, oh, hang on. She said, that Nick Abbott, he's awful. And as for that Gibbon woman, obviously misheard. Not McGiffin, Gibbon, she said. So from that moment on, I probably shouldn't have said that on the air, should I? People would be calling her in. But the hardest job in the whole wide world is apparently being a London cab driver, although this bloke has, is a naysayer. Hey, Derek.
Indeed, very much so. Dispatch riding, mate.
Dispatch?
Riding. Being a dispatch rider in London. The competition.
Are you on a bicycle?
Motorcycle.
Right.
I've actually seen the light and I've become a four-wheel terrorist. I've jumped into a van. But I was on a motorbike for 22 years, and getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, scraping snow off your feet, being frozen by about 8 o'clock, doing 12 hours fighting cabs on the streets of London, and then getting a run up to, say, Manchester or Newcastle, and getting in the early hours of the morning, I'd say that's infinitely harder than sitting in your cab, picking and choosing what jobs you want, working when you want, getting paid well. Ooh. Dodging the tax man. Where else? I mean, they know they're on a good thing. They're all, I don't know, they sit in their cabs, they get in their soap boxes and...
moan. Yeah, you're right.
We all know the truth. Do you know what I mean? They're all smiling deep down.
Everything you just said makes complete sense to me, Derek.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
And it's...
And everyone else out there, I hope.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot, mate. The best of luck.
You're,
all right.
You're welcome. Thank
Ta-da.
You.
I wouldn't go around the streets of London on two wheels. No way. That seems like a crazy thing to do. I mean, whether you've got an engine or not, I would want a steel cage surrounding me. In fact, I want to change up to a bigger car. I know that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be saving the planet. And, like, bicycling to work, but I just can't be bothered. Not that I can't be bothered. I'm scared. Because I know what I'm like. Everyone who's driving a car is in their own little world. We're fiddling with the radio and we're, you know, putting our makeup on. Hey, Helen.
Yes, Nick.
And, you know, selecting tunes and mucking about with the heater and have we got our seat in the place that we want it to be. No one's paying attention to the road at all. And the only time that you do pay attention to the road is when there was one of those big yellow boxes on a pole looms up. And at that point, your eyes are off the road and they're onto your speedo to see that you're not going to get flashed. So cars are hard enough to see when they're coming your way. People on bikes, forget it. We just don't see them.
They've got no chance.
They don't. No. They'd have to be crazy. But particularly to be, to have someone's package that you've got to deliver by a certain time. Otherwise, you know, if it doesn't get there in 30 minutes, it's free.
Have you heard about these motorcycle taxis that you can get?
Yeah, in case you found yourself to be drunk in charge of a car, you can call up and have someone else drive it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like something I'd want to do. I mean, just don't drink. Yeah. The surprising thing when you go out and you don't drink, if you're transport, and you drive yourself in to somewhere and you swear off the alcohol for the evening, the surprising thing that I've found is that your experience of the evening is exactly the same as if you'd been throwing lager down your face. Your evening is almost the same.
Did you investigate this?
Yeah, I have, because, you know, I recently had a near-death experience. Oh, the look of horror
when?
On your face. Couldn't care less.
when was this?
No, I did. Of course I did. And I gave up the booze for about a couple of months. And you don't miss it. And when you go out and you're with people who are drinking, your experience of the evening is just the same as if you had been drinking. The only difference is you don't feel terrible the next morning, like I did on Friday.
The only problem is when you do go out, your choice of drinks is kind of limited.
Yeah, you can only drink so much orange juice or fizzy water. That's right. But, I mean, how thirsty are you? You see, the thing with booze is it makes you thirsty for more booze. I mean, that's the unique thing about lager, for instance.
Yeah.
It's a drying liquid. So you need to drink more of it just to keep yourself liquid.
Yeah.
But with water, there is no similar experience. And you can only drink, but then you don't need to. See, you save money as well.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're drinking
pint after pint of whatever it might be, Coke.
If you're drinking a Coke, you know, it's gone within, you know, a couple of minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but I think more bars should offer
you can only drink so many pints of that. It's not the actual drinking that's the thing. It's where the drinking gets you, mentally. So if you're not going to get anything out of it, then you only need to sip. Other people are throwing pints down them, and you're standing there with a thimble full of water. It'll last you all night long. I mean, how thirsty could you be?
Hmm. And I wonder how many people actually enjoy the taste.
Six.
Oh, is it?
Here's one in Hornchurch. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
I am all right.
Good, hi. Everyone's got it wrong, Nick.
What's that, then?
Most stressful job.
Yeah?
Lorry driver.
Oh, come off it.
Yeah.
Lorry driver, you're sitting up there in your cab going 80
yeah,
miles
exactly.
an hour.
No, that's the point.
Reading
the point.
Your magazines.
Only the guys on these trunk roads are motoring along or God knows what. What about the guys who have to drive through London?
To be honest, I don't know how you guys do it. The size of some lorries going down the minute roads that were built for a horse and carriage.
That's right.
I don't know how you do it. I have getting my little two-door thing around London. Never mind about an articulated thing behind me.
You imagine doing that. I mean, I don't drive Arctics, but I drive a 7.5-ton lorry.
I've got no idea what that looks like.
You imagine that it's about, 30 foot?
Right.
Something like that. You're
out of your mind, Tom. Crazy you are.
Yeah, watching out for the motorcyclists and...
Yeah, sure you do, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very conscientious about that you are.
Mm-hmm. Nothing if not professional.
Yes,
absolutely.
Quite, at all times.
Yeah.
All right, well done, Tom. You're a shining beacon to us all. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
Yes. Well, so what's the hardest, most dangerous job? Not the hardest, necessarily, but the most dangerous job you've ever done there, Helen?
Oh, working in a solicitor's office.
That's not dangerous.
No, I was just really bad at it.
So it was dangerous for the people who were hiring the solicitor?
Yeah, I was typing divorce letters and it was, I was awful. I got sacked in the end.
What a cosseted life you've led.
I know.
That's the most dangerous thing you've done, typing. You might have chipped a nail. I'll quiz you in a second, Chris.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you'll have to come up with something. You'll make it up. I bet you do. This is LBC.
I think you know why I've called you in here, Jones.
Is it the clown's costume, sir?
It's not just that, Jones. It's the juggling.
BC 97.3. 0870-9090-973. Nick Abbott.
Can anybody explain to me the fascination about this Litvinenko bloke, the man with the unpronounceable name who was probably killed by another man with an unpronounceable name, and on and on and on it goes, and it's the only thing that's happened in the news, it seems, this year, and nothing else gets even a look in.
Because it's real-life James Bond, isn't it?
No, it's not. James Bond wasn't, James Bond did the killing himself. This guy used to hire people to do killings.
Yeah, but it's still that espionage world, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, 10 people die on Britain's roads every single day. Where's their publicity? Where's their outpouring of national grief? I just don't get it. It's like the only thing that's been on the news for a week now.
Because it's a unique story.
But really, honestly, hands up in there, who cares? I mean, be honest. Who actually cares? This is a guy we've never heard of before. I don't believe that we're that interested.
Do you think the most interesting thing about it is looking at him as a man before the poisoning and then him in the hospital?
The picture.
It's a before and after. I mean, I'm thinking that. I know loads of people are thinking that. You want to see what he looked like before he got poisoned.
Right.
You want to know about how something like that can, you know, attack the body so quickly. That's what I think's interesting about it. But the spy thing, no, I don't get it.
I think people want to see what a spy really looks like, though.
They just look like ordinary, normal people.
I know.
You could be a spy.
Yes.
We don't know.
From GCAP.
You've got a spy face, actually.
Oh, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No, I just, I'm bemused by this, as though the whole nation is sitting forward on its seat, waiting for the latest development, and I bet the whole nation is tuning off out of sheer boredom. I just don't think we care.
And I think it's also because it's a story that will attract a lot of conspiracy theories.
Well, we all know who did it. Well, and you know what? If let's say, or let's pluck a name out the air, for instance. Let's talk about a guy who obviously didn't do it. Like, you know, the Premier of Russia, Putin. If he'd walked down a Piccadilly and sat and throttled that guy as he was eating his California roll in the sushi restaurant, if he'd taken a half an hour to kill him, still nobody would have done anything about it because he's the president of Russia. What are we going to do? Go and invade Russia now? Of course not. And the Home Office is making serious inquiries into, you know, from the Kremlin and asking them to hand over any information and... Oh, come on.
I read an interesting theory.
Yes?
That they've kind of faked his death. The British government, to make so that, because there was a genuine threat on his life, and so what they did to kind of defuse it is to fake his death so that they wouldn't come after him.
Oh, he's not actually dead?
No, that was all mocked up, and they gave loads of information to the press to try and make it look like he died.
Huh. Conspiracy theory piles on, well, from one nutcase suggestion to another. That's ridiculous. Let's assume that he is actually dead, and that the Foreign Office are banging on the Kremlin's doors, furious they are, demanding answers. No, they're not. They're just going to tell us that that's what they're doing, because what are they going to do? Go and upset Putin, the scary guy in the nice suit? No way. He's got all the gas in the world. If we upset him, then we're going to freeze to death, because he's not going to give us any of that precious gas that pours out of Siberia. All our food is going to go uncooked. We'll be eating microwave meals for the rest of our lives.
Maybe they'll just write him a strongly worded letter.
Yeah, please don't kill anybody.
It's not nice.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Unless, you know, we agree ahead of time, between the two of us, that these are the people that we actually want to rub out.
Who's it going
to
be?
I'm sure there's an enormous list that they exchange. In fact, they probably do each other favours.
Probably.
Here's a list of 10 we'd like rubbed out. If you do this for us, we'll do yours.
People rubbed out? You're talking like a spy.
Swapsies will do. You remember Swapsies, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, I just don't think that people care. Who cares, really? I mean, there's nicer people in the world that have died this week. What about them?
Well, why do you think it's so big in the news, then?
I've got no... Because nothing else is happening. Because people don't want to know about Iraq anymore, because it's depressing. People don't want to know about Afghanistan or North Korea or Iran or any of those sandy areas, because we've, you know, it's... People only want to hear news that's new. If we've heard something from that area before, then we can't be bothered. And news organisations, particularly TV news, which lives to give stories that have pictures, that's the essential thing. Not whether it's actually interesting, it's have we got pictures? And that's where that picture in the hospital comes in, because every time you see a picture of this guy, it's that one.
Mm.
And he's looking... I don't even, I dare say it. He looked tanned, didn't he?
Some of the TV coverage has faded out him before the poisoning to him in the hospital, so you get a fade-in, fade-out of what he looked
morphing.
Like before and after. Yeah.
Like the cry video from
10cc. Yeah.
Of course, we shouldn't be laughing. That's awful.
It's quite an exciting story, though.
No, it isn't. It's really, really boring.
I drove past the hospital on the weekend, and I looked at it and I thought, oh...
You drove past? Well, you want to go in for some tests, mate? and the government is saying, nothing to fear, everyone go back to work, no problems here. Do you know how much poison it took to make him look like that picture that we've seen in the hospital? And Helen is squeezing her fingers together. The infinitesimal amount, like a shaving of a grain of rice is all it took. And the government's running around saying, no problems here, please carry on shopping. Right. And we trust them, don't they? John Selwyn Gummer will come out any moment now and start feeding sushi to his daughter. And Chris is going, yeah, who?
Yeah, who?
We'll educate in between us, eh, Helen?
We'll try.
Yeah, we'll give it a go.
Good luck.
Here's one on the M4. Hello, Neil.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm all right.
What was it you're talking about? Is it the most stressful jobs, or the most difficult, or the most dangerous?
Excellent question. Let's nail it down. Driving a black cab in London is Britain's most difficult job, research claimed yesterday.
Difficult, right, OK. Well, I'm not really in a position to argue with that. What about stressful as well? Is that coming into it?
Well, they compared jobs for levels of injury... stress, skill, and accidental death or injury.
I just don't understand how they can do that. I mean, all these jobs are so, like, unbelievably different, aren't they? It's just, and it depends how you kind of react to what it is that you're doing. You presumably pick a job because you think you can do it, and something that might stress the daylights out of one person might be fine for someone else. So I don't really quite understand it. I mean, the reason I rang in, my mate asked me to ring in because I'm a professional rock climber.
You're a what?
I'm a professional rock climber.
A professional rock climber?
Yeah.
How do you make money doing that?
Sponsorship. I'm sponsored by sort of three different companies, and
Which ones?
Mountain Hardware. They make sort of clothing and equipment, and then some brands that do sort of technical footwear and safety equipment for climbing.
I can't watch people doing that because it's just not entertaining for me because I just think you're going to die all the time. Don't die.
No, it's. Well, you probably can't watch it because it's not exactly a spectator sport either. It's pretty boring. I mean,
well, I don't know. There's
this, someone else do it.
There was this guy in France who it's like an extreme form of rock climbing, and he used to run up mountains. You know the kind of thing I mean? Not he didn't have crampons and nail himself into the side of a hill.
He's not the guy who climbs buildings and always gets arrested. Is it him?
Some sort of thing like that. But he used to not climb carefully up. He used to sprint up. And that was terrifying to watch.
I don't really understand how you can sprint up a cliff.
Like, oh, I'm serious. The speed at which he went up was... My heart was in my mouth constantly. Right. I just couldn't watch it for pleasure.
But the Russians do this kind of speed climbing thing, but, I mean, it's a matter of whether or not they use a rope, I guess. I mean, if you use a rope, it doesn't really matter how fast you go, but if you don't use a rope, obviously if you fall off, that's it.
I think the only equipment he arrived with was shorts and a T-shirt.
Probably, yeah. But I've got a friend who's, I think one up from being a rock climber, I've got a friend who's a professional base jumper, and I just think that's got to be the UK's most dangerous profession. I mean, there's only two, maybe three of them in the country who make a living from base jumping, but that is proper danger money.
Can I ask you a question about this? A personal question?
Yeah, go on.
Approximately, you don't have to nail it down to the penny, but what kind of money are we talking about for a professional rock climber?
Round about the sort of, well, I guess, I mean, there's probably about 10 of us in the country, between sort of 20, and the best paid guy gets about 35 grand.
And can you be insured for anything?
Not really, no. No, I can't get insurance for what I do, no.
And what does your mum think of this?
Well, I've done it since I was a young lad, so she's kind of used to it now.
Right.
My wife is as well, I guess. I've sort of climbed all the time I've known her, so she knows the score with it.
Neither of them are begging you to get a proper job.
Not really, no. I wouldn't be very good at a proper job.
No.
I certainly find driving lorries and black cabs a lot more stressful than climbing cliff faces.
Right. Okay, well, I'll give it a go in a next life.
Okay, well,
thanks a lot, Neil.
Good to speak to you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Professional rock climbing. No, I think I'll stick to what I'm doing right now. Sitting on my wobbly bottom on a comfortable chair in an air-conditioned studio. That's as dangerous as I want to get.
Incy Wincy Spider.
Pirates of the Caribbean is the biggest selling DVD what Disney have ever released. But it's rubbish. Have you seen that movie?
No way.
Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh, struth, it's painful. I wanted to kill myself when I was watching that movie. I wanted Alexander Litvinenko to recruit a murderer to come in and actually throttle me with my own chopsticks.
How many hours long was it?
About seven. It just never seemed to end. Awful it was. And I was watching it in a cinema in the Docklands, in London's fashionable Docklands area, that was heated like they were growing tomatoes in there. And it smelt of feet.
Was the cinema full?
No, it was virtually empty. That's how popular that movie was.
Yeah, of course.
Dreadful.
So why didn't you leave?
That's an excellent question, because I was there with people who were enjoying it. The fools.
Tricky.
I've never left a film halfway through it.
I have.
Have
you? Only one.
What was it?
It was an actor whose work I really admire. He was the lead in Blue Velvet, from where this comes.
Don't touch me, or I'll kill you!
And it's Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper was in a film that I've never heard him speak about. And I've read a lot of interviews and seen lots of conversations with Dennis Hopper. And, of course, he'll talk about Blue Velvet and he'll talk about Easy Rider and all of these movies. The one thing I've never heard him talk about is a movie called Paris Trout, which is about the most unpleasant film I have ever seen. Don't go and see it, Helen.
Okay.
It's deeply misogynistic and sadistic and violent and utterly repellent.
I bet you won't talk about Waterworld either.
Well, you know what? I must be the only person on the face of this planet, wet or otherwise, that actually liked Waterworld.
Oh, really?
I thought that was a good film.
Oh. Well, maybe the concept was all right, but the actual film itself was a load of rubbish, wasn't it?
Oh, no, it wasn't a load of rubbish. I think that there becomes a head of steam to opinions like this, and then it becomes, and from one opinion, suddenly it becomes the accepted way of thinking about any given subject.
No,
I don't think people actually believe that Waterworld was that bad, it's just that they've heard it was.
No, seriously, honestly, I bet you can't find anyone else who enjoyed Waterworld as much as you did.
Well, I didn't rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. But people must have enjoyed it. They must have done. Let's go with Bromley. Hello, Greta.
Oh, hello, my darling, Nicholas. Yes, I was just saying to... I don't know who I was speaking to when I phoned you up, but you know what? I was feeling so sorry for this young man. I mean, he's only 41.
Who?
But when I read...
Alexander Litvinenko?
Yes, right, yeah. But when I read, he's a KGB man, and what he'd done to his fellow Russians, I thought, no, hang on a minute, because I did read on Sunday the opinion of, gosh, a great, very, very good journalist who writes in the Sunday Mail, and she said, why are you feeling sorry for him? What did he do to his fellow Russians? He chased them down. He had them hanged. He had them,
executed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say
yeah.
it.
And you know what? I did change my mind. But the only person I feel very, very sorry and upset about is his wife and his son. And also perhaps his father. But his father must have known. I don't know whether his mother was still alive. I as a mother, would feel very sorry for her. But if my son was doing what he did, I mean, it's like the Holocaust, you know, the Nazis a lot of the Jewish people who sort of betrayed their own nationality. They said, "Oh, we're doing that, you know, because we don't want to get killed." But
I think you've strayed off the point there, Greta. Can we come back from the Second World War?
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right.
I was a little girl in the Second World War.
We haven't come back from the Second World War yet. Can we leave that far, far away?
Yeah, okay.
In a place long ago.
Yeah.
But no, you're absolutely right, and I said this on Saturday night, and it's the one thing about this bloke that no one in the news has actually mentioned, who
absolutely.
He was. Because, a poor man, he's lost all his hair, and he's in hospital. Poor man. And, you know, he ate a grain of rice in a sushi bar. Raw fish he was eating. Dreadful. Yeah. For lunch. And,
Nick,
yes?
Interrupt you. I felt like that until I had read and understood what the KGB really did.
Never mind about the KGB, what he specifically did. He used to recruit people to murder people who were business rivals to the ones that the KGB favoured.
Yes.
Like, for instance, as a favour... He there was a chap who owed money to creditors, just like, you know, you would owe money to the bank or any of those companies that advertise on daytime television. And so as a favour, just, you know, like mates, he had the creditors, the people who this chap owed money to, taken out and killed.
Yeah. But
so Nicholas, that he didn't owe them any money anymore.
Yeah, but
nice.
Nicholas, can I just interrupt you for
again?
A moment?
Yes.
You know, the papers have been so full of how... he was dying, and it was a dreadful thing. And what I also feel very, very upset and worried about is the people who are innocent have been where he was, in the hotel and in the restaurant.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about that, Greta, because according to the government, everything is perfectly safe.
Oh, what?
So you can relax.
Thank you, darling.
All right,
thank
cheers.
Thank you very much for taking my phone.
What a nice lady. This is LBC 97.3. I'm Nick Abbott. Where are we now? Let's go with Great Suffolk Street. That's very precise. Hello, William.
Hello, young man.
Old man.
I've never heard such baloney in my life. Black cabs, you know.
I just think that's ridiculous.
Well, I'm a motorcycle courier, man. I put up with them people every day. and the buses and the double liners and the people walking out in front of me, the rain, the snow and everything else.
I think the stress, that when you keep stress in, that's when it becomes a problem. But when you let stress out, when you're shouting and, you know, and shaking your fist, in-out, shaking it all about, that's when you release stress. And it seems to me that black cab drivers are very good at releasing stress.
Yeah, but they have four wheels to, you know, they've got four wheels under them. Well, a motorcyclist only got two wheels, one mistake and, you know, you have an accident.
They're dry and warm and listening to LBC.
No, another point is that it must have been, it was a paper about a year ago that it said the most dangerous jobs in the world, and one was, the first was the bomb disposal unit.
Yeah.
The second was a deep sea diver.
Mm.
And the motorcycle courier was third, so I don't know where they got this black cab from, mate. What have you done?
And it was the discovery, it wasn't the company that makes black cabs have done this survey, or the company, or they're just about to raise the fares again and are trying to get support from the public. Mm. It was the Discovery Channel. What have they got to do with it?
Well, obviously, you know, I know a lot of people that have been motorcycle couriers and now are black cabs, and they said they've never had it so good. So, you know, tell me which is the most dangerous, doing one piece and then laughing and smiling and earning lots of money, and they're out in a cold killing themselves for peanuts.
Well, you've described that quite graphically. Thanks a lot, William.
No worries, mate.
Cheers. Here is Barnsley. It's Louise.
Hi, Nick.
Louise.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Good. This is Richard Spy.
The spy, yeah.
Yeah. I don't feel sorry for him. I think the thing is, we've seen him in the newspaper. And people are like, oh, we've seen him in the newspaper. I think that's all it is. And he kind of, like, he commissioned murders and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot, apparently.
Yeah, and that's what he was. So I don't know why people feel sorry for him, because he wasn't a very nice person, really, was he?
No, you live by the poisonous spray, you die by the poisonous spray. Yeah.
And to my mind, he was a murderer because he commissioned people to do it.
But getting people to commit murder is just the same as doing it yourself. There's no difference in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think.
You're giggling though, Louise. This isn't funny. Very serious.
I always giggle.
Yeah.
It's a nervous thing, I think.
What's the hardest, most difficult and dangerous job you've ever done?
Working at McDonald's, having to walk past all the chefs throwing chips at you.
Well, without mentioning any brand names, McDonald's. Not Burger King, mine. McDonald's, was it?
Yeah.
I don't think dodging chips is necessarily what you describe as being dangerous.
It was if they were being violent. I mean, they kicked and punched people.
You've worked in a local radio station.
I did work experience there, yes.
I mean, you could have died of boredom. That would have been dangerous.
I enjoyed it. I loved it. Yeah, it was fun.
Fun?
Yeah.
I don't know, the concept of radio and fun, it's just almost like they don't go together in my mind.
I loved it. I got to go to bed really late, get up really late, and I got to sit around answering the phones eating cake all night.
Cake! Oh, well, you should have said cake there was. All right, well, on that happy note, I'll leave you. Thanks a lot, Louise.
Yes,
Tara, this is LBC 97.3, I'm Nick Abbott. If you were wondering what on earth is going on, Ian is sick.
Your desk is a permanent mess.
97.3 0870 9090 973. Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Chris. What's this? Oh, yes. This is the banana story on the new... But it's like a banana theme, this show today. We're all wearing yellow and looking resplendent. Not quite your colour, Helen. Never mind. Tesco's is... See, I did it again. They just want us to advertise them without us paying for it. A supermarket has unveiled what it describes as the first sweet sandwich. It's made from white bread with added cocoa to the bread mix, right? So it's chocolate-flavoured bread. Already, I'm interested. With chocolate spread on the inside and banana. Now, the thing about banana in a pre-made sandwich is the bananas go black. If you're going to make a banana sandwich, like I've got a banana sandwich in with me at the moment, but I will make it manually at the scene of consumption. Because if you make it beforehand, it all goes black and gooey. Ugh.
You don't put butter on that as well, do you?
What, in this bread from the supermarket?
Well, on any sandwich with banana.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Butter and banana
like
goes,
really
does
thick
it?
Butter?
Butter goes with everything. Are you crazy?
Yeah. Sometimes.
Can I have a bite of your banana sandwich?
Oh. This one in Langley in Berkshire. Hello, Dion.
Hello, Chris. Sorry, Nick.
Yes, Dion.
All right, yeah. You're talking about Alexander.
Alexander Litvinenko, crazy name, crazy guy.
Yeah, I can't pronounce his second name. But I think we were talking about in the office this morning. I don't think he's dead.
You don't think he's dead?
No.
What, poorly?
No, I think he's gone into hiding.
Well, you know, stranger things have happened. Yeah, why not? If say,
well,
for instance...
I work for the security forces.
You work for the security forces?
Yeah.
In what capacity?
MI6.
You work for MI6?
Yeah.
Right. In, what do you do for MI6?
I work for them.
What does that mean?
I'm going to Macedonia tomorrow morning. Well, this morning. 4:30 this morning.
Going to Macedonia?
Yeah.
What, staging a coup, are you?
No. Macedonia won independence from Croatia.
And you're about to, what, sort it out for them?
No, I won't independently.
You're going to make sure it happens. You know a man that can, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to get all suited and booted in your little black costume. You're going to put boot polish on your face.
No, I don't wear a black costume.
Right.
No. I stay in a hotel.
Nice one.
And, I wear jeans and a t-shirt.
Oh, jeans, what? So dress down, like one of those dress down spies?
Well, I wouldn't call myself a spy.
Facilitator?
Yeah, maybe. I suppose I'm a spy. I never thought of me that way.
Right. I bet no one's ever thought of it that way, Dion. What do you really do?
Just look after people.
Right. What, as in kill them?
No, I've never killed anyone.
Torture? A little light torture every now and again? Thank you, sir.
LSD.
May I have another?
No, give them LSD.
LSD? Oh, right. Drug dealer?
No. Just give them LSD. Make them talk.
What, like, say thank you, they would. We're all off to Glastonbury. That sort of thing.
No, not at all, mate.
Right. Well, you've got believers here, Dion. We're all nodding in agreement. Thanks a lot, mate, and the best of luck. All right.
Okay, then.
Ta-ta.
Oh.
Right. Of course, that's the first thing that someone who works for MI6 would do, is tell us that they work for MI6. Yeah, it's the thing that they sign when they join up. What you must do is to tell strangers that you work for, you know, the Secret Service. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not important, is it?
James Bond would be proud of you, mate. Here's one, which is vaguely described as in the car, and it's a chap called, or woman, I've got no idea, Lurkio.
I'm in the SAS.
Don't tell anybody, right.
Especially not Dion. Otherwise he'll come round and give me some pounds, shillings and pence.
Yes. And a CD of his greatest hits.
Yeah. anyway, this Mr. Unpronounceable Russian Surname
yeah.
Get sympathy after, even though he's like, you know, blah blah. Anyway, right, this radioactive malarkey that they've slipped in his fish burger.
Yes.
Or whatever it was, and it's like, you know, turned him into Kojak, taking all his air off his body.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he has gone into hiding. Because I reckon they just shaved his head and put a bit of mascara under his eyes to give him that gaunt look of death.
But bizarrely, that picture, he doesn't actually look that... Apart from he's got no hair, he doesn't actually look that unwell, does he? Weirdly.
Yeah, but his eyebrow hair forgot to fall out.
Is that right?
They forgot to shave it. Yeah, that's what I noticed on. Here's this sort of, you know, highly radioactive... you know, material that they've stuck in his food, and it's hard enough to make all of his hair fall out, but he's got Superman's eyebrows. Because his eyebrows were still there. That's just got to be the vanity of the spy. No, I go for death thing, but you don't shave my eyebrows.
And he said it exactly like that, too. Yeah, it's uncanny how you got him. We're going to re-examine that picture under a microscope.
Google it. Google it now and tell the public what you see, but I have to go because I'm now being transferred to the SBS.
So, all right, the best of luck, mate.
Places to go, people to kill. Laters.
Ta-ta. All of this death that we're dealing with on this show, whatever happened to peace, love and understanding?
The changeover date for the construction industry scheme is nearly here. From April, contractors will need to complete...
London's LBC 97.3. 0870-9090-973. Nick Abbott.
Well, I quite like the sound of that. The chocolate bread with chocolate spread and bananas on the inside. And you know the one ingredient that they've missed out on that? One obvious ingredient that is lacking in that sandwich, obviously, is...
Jam?
No. Jam? How can you have jam and chocolate?
Marmalade.
But you know what is actually good? Jam and fried egg in a sandwich.
No.
Yeah. I kid you not. Jam with fried egg in a sandwich. Mm.
How did that come about? Mm.
A horrible kitchen accident. No, it's lovely. I can remember that as a child. Ooh, I did enjoy that. But no, the one ingredient in chocolate bread, chocolate spread and bananas that they have missed out there is obviously crunchy peanut butter.
Mm. No.
Huh?
No.
What do you mean no?
No.
That's
horrible.
It's not horrible.
Ugh.
They go together like, egg and jam, like I previously explained. Yeah. See, Ian Lee is feeling unwell, and if he's unfortunate enough to be listening to this show right now, in between chucking up in a bucket, then this isn't going to make him feel any better, is it? Hey, Ian, can I interest you in a large bowl of mashed banana? Here's one in Crawley. Hello, Jake.
Hi, mate.
How are you?
Oh, well, I don't know. I might have nothing wrong with Dion. Do you think he actually might have gone round to visit our Russian friend and bored him to death?
Yes.
And salivating over your new addition to the chocolate sandwich from the unnamed supermarket.
Yes.
Our peanut butter crunchy would be an excellent addition, I think.
I think I've got a winner there.
I think you have. Maybe we should tell the one with the tea about this.
Well, let's tell Sainsbury's, and then they can fight it out amongst themselves. All right.
Absolutely. Unless, of course, Vinyenko actually ate one of those and died of a massive coronary, of course.
Yeah, that probably didn't happen, no. I don't think they serve that in sushi bars.
No, shame. Mind you, they might serve it in hospitals. That'd be quite nice if they did.
And when the fish arrived, it wasn't even cooked. Can you imagine how disappointed he was?
Disgusting, honestly. Why would anyone want to eat soup, raw fish? Poor man. Anyway, nothing about him, really. Waterworld is a classic.
Waterworld!
It's a classic film.
One of the greatest stunts ever seen in cinema, when the when he fires a large arrow into the back of this plane,
straight across the ship,
and secures the plane to the end of the like a pole. What do they call that pole in the middle of the ship?
The
mast. And then the plane goes around in ever decreasing circles, not being able to break free from this wire. And eventually just smashes itself into the middle of this pole. Brilliant. Absolutely, how can you not like Waterworld?
Well, exactly. Also, very closely followed, of course, by probably one of the first televised bungee jumps from the air to pick the child out of the water.
Well, the greatest stunt I've ever seen was the start of one of those silly James Bond films with the guy who looks like he's just wandering around a clothes shop, Pierce Brosnan, when they leapt off that dam.
Yes.
That damn dam, yeah. Stunning.
Do you think it is? It's because it's Costa? Because he did Dances with Wolves before that, didn't they? And that was all very classic and had pathos. Do you think they were really expecting him to do the same again? It's an adventure film. It's
yeah. Just relax with a bucket of popcorn and, just enjoy it. Just open your mind, Chris.
On FM. London's LBC 97.3.
Hello!
0870-9090-973. Nick Abbott.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Have you seen the Borat movie yet?
No.
That was a long thing.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know you were talking to me.
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Are you
I never
talking
will.
To me?
Yes, hello. No, I never will. Have you?
I'm the only one here. You must be talking to me.
Have you seen her?
Yes, I have. It's so hilarious that I virtually needed medical attention after watching that movie. My face was aching. I was laughing so much. Even though I knew how unpleasant he'd been accused of being to the people that he was making to look like fools, I felt quite sorry for him until I saw the movie, and then I was just laughing so much I didn't care anymore. But they're very upset. They're threatening to kill him now.
Who's upset?
The gypsies in Transylvania. They want to impale Borat star Sacha Baron Cohen on a stake. And that's not all. They want to castrate him as well. It's not very nice, is it? For lampooning them in his film. The villagers are furious because they were portrayed as rapists and prostitutes who drink horse urine. I mean, he just goes so totally over the top. It really is too funny, this movie. By the way, I'm not Ian Lee. That much is obvious. Ian Lee is at home. Poor baby. And Chris couldn't care less, could you?
Nah.
He's ill. He's throwing up and all the rest of it that goes with being really, really sick, Helen. Got a cold, he has. Or something much more serious. We're
I
not
thought
sure.
He had Victorian influenza.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. The row has flared up in a Romanian community, a place called Glod, which is where he filmed the opening of this movie. And do you know what Glod means? Do you know what they've called their town? Mud. It's a town called Mud. That sounds like somewhere you want to go. A guy called Georgie, 46, said that Borat is a... No, here's a phrase I don't even know if I can say on the air. I bet Steve Allen could get away with it. Me? I don't know. Son of a... You know the thing that is between the land and the sea? Oh, and Chris is going, what's land and the sea? What could possibly be between the land and the sea? He's going, can you think? Any idea?
It's a tricky one.
You know what's between the land and the sky? The sea. And what's just before the sea? Just before you get on there, you go down there with your little bucket and spade. The beach, yes. He thinks that that's what he is, a son of a beach. Did I get past that one all right?
Yeah. You can say it once.
And he made them look like savages. Yeah, pretty much. Have you seen Borat?
No.
Who are all these people that haven't seen Borat yet?
Well, I think it's just Americans that have seen it, isn't it?
No, it's number one movie here.
Here, is it? I thought it was just a number one movie in America.
I'm amazed that Americans went to see it. And I thought at the time, the reason... Well, first of all, I said, no way will Americans go and see this guy, because they won't know who he is. Firstly. And second, they won't think it's funny, because it's British humour. And they don't get us like we get them. But they did. It was like the number one film in America, despite being opened on a very few screens over there. So it did fantastically well. And I thought, well, why is this? Hmm. And the theory that I came up with is that in these times of troubles... What do you want to do to what you perceive to be your common enemy? And that's to laugh at them.
That's true.
And, of course, 60% of the people who live in Kazakhstan are Muslims. So I thought that America, as one, wanted to go and laugh at the people that they perceived to be their common enemy. But then all concerns of that nature just went right out the window when I saw the movie. And I just, my face hurt for hours afterwards. I was laughing so much. These poor people, though, still very upset. He said, this is Transylvania, home of Dracula, and if he ever returns, we'll stick a stake in his backside and cut his area off.
Banana.
We were never told it was going to be a comedy, and we were never told that we were going to be made to look stupid. The film's opening sequence shows Borat in his one-roomed shack, which he shares with a cow. It's so funny. Because he's showing us around his house, his nice little... Well, it's not nice at all, really. Not even a state agent could make that seem habitable. And the camera pans by as he walks out the door, and there's a cow that's at least as big as the room that it's standing in. And the cow does something. I don't know what a cow does. It's either sneezed or coughed. Do cows cough?
Maybe.
Even in a medical, do they turn their heads to the side and cough?
Everything coughs.
And it coughed or sneezed or something like that as the camera was panning by. Like a comedy moment that you couldn't have planned for or scripted. And Borat says something like, bless you, or Gesundheit, or you know, one of those things. The house owner, a chap called Luca, said the cow went to the toilet all over the house. Not even in the toilet. All over the place.
That's
it
disgusting.
Did. Yeah. Well, it would. That's what cows do. Do you know that... I don't know that this is true. I just read it in a newspaper, so I'll say it as though it is true. Did you know that 4% of the greenhouse gases that are going to doom us all are produced by man, meaning a full 96% are produced by the earth what we live in, mostly coming from the wrong end of a cow.
So it's the cow's fault?
Yes.
All right, I don't feel so bad anymore.
No, and you know what? That, it's the 4x4s. Gordon is about to slap big fines on people who drive 4x4s. Not that it's going to make the slightest bit of difference, unless he actually doubles the price of the car. Because if you're going to spend, you know, 70 grand on a status symbol, another £500 isn't going to make the slightest bit of difference, is it? So it's this whole green taxes thing. I just think they've got pound signs in their eyes. And all the political parties are as one on this. Because they actually found a way to tax us, which we don't mind. It's almost as though we're insisting that they do it. They can't believe their luck. Which is why they're all speaking with one voice on this issue. Because no matter who comes in, they'll all want our money. And it's much easier to get our money if we don't mind giving it to them. Oh, save a tree? Oh, well, you should have said so. Have some more, we'll say. Anyway, where was I?
So what's your big plan? Get rid of all the cows?
Get rid of all the cows, and, then we'll be happy. That sounds like Nirvana, right here on Earth, don't it?
Wasn't that a lovely meal?
Abbott.
Yeah.
Here's one in High Wycombe. Hello, Edwina.
Good afternoon, Nick.
Edwina.
Oh, I've bucked up the courage to talk to you.
Good for you.
I've listened to you ever since you stood in for Gary Poole.
Oh, yeah.
And I've really enjoyed your programme.
Aw.
But can I also just say, if Ian is listening, we all send him our love and best wishes. And
yes, we do.
Makes a very speedy recovery.
Yeah, and a hot cup of tea.
Well, he hasn't. Does he drink tea now? I thought he... Oh, was that coffee? Maybe he's off the coffee. But I would recommend honey, fresh root ginger grated, and lemon juice, if he's got a cold, with hot water.
That sounds vile.
Oh, no, it's great. It's the best thing.
I don't think it's a cold, because I was told was... Like, his food was coming out of...
Oh, he's been... right.
Everywhere it can come out
oh,
from.
Oh, gosh. Poor thing. Nothing, then. Don't eat anything. Dry biscuit or something. Yeah.
Little bit of dry bread and water.
Yeah. But, Nick.
Yes.
I was prompted to speak to you because Dion, I was on the line.
Yeah.
And he purports, you know, to work for MI6.
Yeah, sure he does.
But we'll go along with that.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. But what's been intriguing me is number stations. Have you ever heard of that?
What?
Number stations.
What's that then?
Well, if you've got a shortwave radio and you sort of take it outside, say, to your garden or something...
You're not a nerd, are you, Edwina?
No, but it's something I used to do, but it sort of cropped up again. And if you sort of listen to, say, the shipping forecast and sort of twiddle around on the knob and go to the edge of that band of, say, the shipping forecast, you hear a whole series of numbers. It could start off with the tune, and they come on regular times, and then you hear something like 0, 1, 3... 5, 7, 8, and you have a whole listing of numbers, and then it will conclude 0, 0, 0. And a family member of mine used to be on submarines, and he said that when they used to be under the water, they used to stick up the aerial, and they used to hear this. And one food of thought is that it was operatives sending coded messages to operatives in the field.
But very suspicious.
The intriguing thing is that no one has been able to decipher it, unlike the Enigma code, you know, in the Second World War. the boffins, you know, Batchley Park, you know, were able to decipher the Enigma code, no one has really come up with, you know, what this is. And it's not a voice like yours and mine. It's like a computerized female voice or a male voice. And it can be in English. It could be male or female. It could be in Russian and German and Chinese. And, you know, what is it? What are these serious numbers? And it's been going on since, I don't know, maybe the Second World War, maybe before then.
I never even heard of such a thing, Edwina.
I'm sorry, because I thought you, been in radio for some time, would have come across this.
No, I don't know anything about radio,
really?
I've got one in my car, that's all I know.
Oh, you are very modest.
No, I mean it. I don't know anything about radio. I've got no idea even how it works. In America, you have to have qualifications. You have to actually know how stuff works. You have to be able to pull a desk apart and put it back together again before they'll let you on the air.
Really?
Here, just any old fool. I mean, look at me. I was just walking past the building. They said, do you want a show?
Well, I tell you what, if more people can be like you, it'd be great radio.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Edwina.
Okay.
Ta-ra.
Bye.
You got any clue? You were an engineer, Helen.
It's obviously a secret code, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going backwards and forwards to spies in other countries.
It seems a very inconvenient way to communicate with each other, though, just by numbers. I mean, you'd have to give out a lot of numbers to even make a sentence, wouldn't you?
But each number is a letter of the alphabet, so somebody at the other end, like, one is A,
yeah.
Two is B.
Right.
So it's...
So after 6 hours, you'll have said, like, a couple of sentences.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you'll be dead, because the sentence would have been, get out now, because Putin knows you're there. Don't eat the raw fish. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yes. You think that we'd have moved on from that level of communication by now? What, they haven't got mobile phones?
It's not that much of a secret code anyway, because anyone could work it out.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Well, that nice lady had just got through telling us that no one had worked it out.
Mm.
Look at all these people here. They want to tell us what it is. I bet they do.
I'll find out.
All right, we'll go to them in a moment. Here is a Tallulah.
Hello, you.
Hey, Tallulah.
I had two bananas today.
Did you?
Out of respect, I normally have one, and because it's celebration of the banana day, I had two.
I don't actually know that it is banana day. I made that up, but, you know, it's Monday. Why not?
I listened to the radio. I took you serious. I shouldn't have done that.
No, never take me seriously. I've no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, I want to actually talk serious business now.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard about radioactive poison before this case there right now?
What, this polonium stuff?
Yeah.
No, I've never heard about it before. I think they made it up.
No, well, but the stuff exists, doesn't it?
I don't know. I only know that it exists because I was told it on the telly.
Because I wonder if it is will be another upgrade of dimension of danger.
Huh?
Huh?
What?
You see, will this be the only case? Or will it have a ping-pong effect?
Oh, ping-pong. That sounds good. Let's have a game right now. No, well, the government is assuring us. They said, nothing to worry about. Everything's all right.
They always say that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. You know, like beef burgers with John Selwyn Gummer. Mm. And Chris has still got no idea what I'm talking about. Yes, you know, if the government tells us that we have nothing to worry about, then I, for one, am prepared to believe them, because, you know, eventually they'll start telling us the truth.
But you see, they, in the news, they say it just now, they found it in six locations, okay? What my first association I had when I heard that was the case of cocaine, when they found cocaine traces near high-fly businessmen.
I think you'll find it everywhere you go. If you swabbed the toilets in the Houses of Parliament, you'd probably find it.
That's where it was as well, yeah, I remember now. Yeah.
But apparently we have nothing to worry about. You have to actually ingest it. Unfortunately, you have to ingest such a microscopically small amount that you could probably breathe it in without even knowing that it was there. But everyone should carry on with their business. Let's not, actually lose money over this, eh?
So basically this spy, or this guy who died, he had some locations on his itinerary where he will be, and they just located it where he could be, and that's how he could help.
Whatever it is you just said, I completely agree. Yeah, in fact, I couldn't have put it better myself.
Okay.
I couldn't have put it like that myself. How's your parrot, by the way?
Well, we did not go to the audition for the Pirate of the Sea audition.
Good. Rubbish film. Pirates of the Caribbean were auditioning for a parrot, apparently, because that's the sort of thing that they needed. But you don't have a parrot, you have a budgie.
Exactly, and I thought, you know, I was walking on the borderline of madness and being taken serious. I thought, no, I can't do that, because otherwise they completely say put me into the wrong drawer.
Yeah, they might think you're a loon.
Yeah, that's it, and I'm not really.
Because a guy with a parrot on his shoulder could look menacing, but a guy with a budgie on his shoulder, that would just make you go, aww.
Doesn't work, no.
No.
They put me in a loony house.
Yeah.
I like to be free as a bird.
Of course. Unlike the bird that you actually, you know, carry around
in the cage.
In a bag, yes.
On my bag.
Anyway, best of luck, Tallulah. All right.
Bye-bye.
Don't eat any raw fish. Here's one in Reading. Hello, Simon.
Hi there.
Simon.
Heard you were talking about the number stations. I've got a couple of clips if you'd like to hear them.
Yeah, go on then.
But first of all, they're doing this right. What it is, and you're right, it is, allegedly, because nobody's ever proven it and nobody admits it, instructions to operatives aboard.
Right, we're about to broadcast it, and undoubtedly we'll start a nuclear war with Russia. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the first one is just the numbers, and I'll play you the theme tune, if it works.
7-4-3-7-9 7-4-3-7-9
Those are the numbers I picked in the lottery.
9-0-1-0
It's transmitted from Aqua Cleary.
From where?
0-1
Okay, you can stop it now.
6-6
Oh, it's out of control. The machine's taken over.
Yes.
It's coming from where?
Aqua Cleary.
Where's that?
Cyprus.
Right.
There's a huge, huge RAF base there with these huge antennas. They cover virtually the whole of the world.
Give us a bit of the music.
There we go.
Of course, this is number one in Cyprus.
Yeah. That's the British one. There's lots of them. There's German, Italian.
Oh God! If the British music sounds that bad, can you imagine how awful the German one sounds? Let's not hear that right now.
London's LBC 97.3. 0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Kathleen Turner sounded like she'd had a good dinner, didn't she? She'd planed the sharp edges off her words.
Mm.
Running together they were.
Yep.
I think she's great. Body
she's
Heat.
Great.
What a movie. But something called Rock and Roll won Best Play, is that right?
Yes.
Now, there's the thing that I've avoided. Well, you know, tickets cost too much for a start. So if it's free, I'll go. Because, you know, most things are so bad you walk out halfway anyway. Almost everything I see, I want to leave halfway. I think, would I rather be sitting at home watching The Sopranos on the TV? And the answer is almost always yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, stop it.
It's true. Live theatre is, by and large, really dull.
What was the last thing you walked out of halfway through?
I'm just trying to think what the last thing I saw was. It was probably the Blue Man... Oh, no, I stayed all... I wanted to walk out of the Blue Man group. You know, those guys who paint themselves blue and bang around and make a noise. I wanted to walk out halfway, but there was no interval, so I was stuck. But I would have done if I could, but I couldn't, so I didn't.
Would you go to the theatre to see Kathleen Turner?
Well, yes, if it was free. You see, the thing with theatre is that it just costs too much. If you want to go and see a comedy, like that Q thing, I quite fancy that Q thing.
It's on Shaftesbury
Avenue Q,
that's
right.
That's very, very funny.
Yeah. Nothing's that funny. It costs £55 to sit down.
Avenue Q. Is that the Muppet one?
It's the Muppet. There's a really funny scene in it.
Sure there is.
It's very, very...
Was it worth £55?
Yes.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
I saw Borat for £3. It couldn't possibly have been that funny.
That's rubbish, though.
Borat's not rubbish.
It looks rubbish.
Borat?
Mm, the film.
I'm telling you it's not rubbish.
I think you're just picking the premium seats, because I went and saw Kathleen Turner a few years ago in The Graduate, when she first came over, and that was only about £35.
Did you see her in the naughty naked nude?
I'm afraid I did.
No, you didn't, because I saw that too, and the lights went off the moment her gown hit the floor.
Not unless you were in the front row.
Well, that's not a cheap seat.
No, yeah, it's the, what do they call that bit down there? The
pit.
Stalls.
Stalls.
They're quite cheap.
The stalls are not cheap. The stalls are the most expensive seats in the ass.
The boxes are.
He's very difficult, isn't he, Helen? Do you give this kind of grief to Ian? This is why he's taking the day off. He couldn't face it.
Well, that must be, you probably won't be in all week then.
Here's one in Thamesmead. Hello, Bob.
Good evening, Nick. Welcome back, if I may say that.
Thank you.
I wanted to explore an angle on this nuclear detonation that this fellow suffered, this poor Rusky fellow suffered.
I don't think it was a detonation. Really.
Well, you know what I mean. I mean, here is some poor guy a couple of weeks ago got banged up for 40 years for fantasizing about dumping a dirty bomb in the underground. And here we have somebody actually with access to some form of radioactive material. And MI5 knew nothing about it, yet they've banged this poor guy up for just dreaming about doing something.
Oh, come on. So I, like everybody else in this country, has nothing but full confidence in our Secret Service.
Oh, you do?
I knew I couldn't get that out with a straight face.
No, exactly. Well, I thought the Secret Policeman's Ball was great. I mean, that was excellent. But I'm afraid this dame, whatever her name is, in MI5, and is telling us we got 30 years of terrorism to look forward to.
Oh, great.
And, you know, she actually came out and said that. I was thinking of emailing her.
But at least the X Factor's on at the weekend, eh?
Wow, isn't that a wonderful show? I mean, and to think I used to go and see people like Pink Floyd and Sabbath and Yes and all that crap in concert.
Yeah.
And I could have saved my money and gone to see, like, queued for a year to see the X Factor final or something like that.
I know.
Because those guys are brilliant. I love the...
They're geniuses.
I love the pianist fellow. Oh, by the way, talking about, did you see Madonna's concert last night?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I forced myself to watch it. I had to take a plastic bucket to bed with me just in case, but I forced myself to watch it, and it's official, Nick. Madonna does mime a lot of that stuff, and it, you know, if you know your music, and I suspect you do, and you know your live performances, then I'd give her some credit. She might sing some of it. But also,
the thing with Madonna is that she's just a really bad singer. She can't sing very well at all. I mean,
there's nothing there. The show was tacky in the extreme. Tacky.
Madonna, tacky. I find that hard to believe. Writhing around a pole, was she?
She writhed around a pole which came out through a saddle.
Nice.
But it was very amateur. It was totally amateurish. She pretended to play lead guitar. Which was, she's a worse lead guitarist than Noel Gallagher, you know what I'm saying? And it was awful. But that's kind of got...
But you watched the whole thing.
You see, Nick, I'm a bit of a...
Sadist.
I'm a bit of a...
Masochist.
Tolkien freak, and I've started reading the whole Tolkien thing from the beginning.
What's that got to do with Madonna?
Well, because I went to bed reading The Hobbit, And I put the Channel 4 on deliberately so that I could, I was going to give Madonna the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, if she could play, if she was devastating, then I'd mark her accordingly. So I read The Hobbit, I was perfectly happy, and in the background was this drivel going on, but there was nothing else on.
Right, so you watched the whole thing then, like I said?
I let the whole thing play out, and I watched the, finale with the dancers and all that. The dancers were rubbish. They're not that.
Moan. You were glued to it, Bob. Who are you kidding?
I've seen old Madonna stuff. You know, when she did whatever those tours were called, when she did she had the large pointed breast attachment thing.
Oh, who can forget that? Yeah.
She did all that. And, you know, that wasn't a bad show. It's not my thing. But that didn't seem to be a bad show, but she's lost it totally. The problem is, why does she keep going on? It's the sycophancy of the media.
I think it's more than money, really. Hundreds of millions of pounds that end up in her bank account. That's probably got something to do with it.
It's shocking. How can a real critic go on air and say, for example, you know, I saw the Madonna concert and it was wonderful and blah, 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 and all those sort of... What's that woman's name? Was it Fiona Bruce interviewed her recently? What a wonderful person she is, and flan. Well, you know, chuck 5 million at it and save 1,000 African lives from starvation and sickness.
I'll tell you what, Bob, I'm going to cheer you up. I'll send you a couple of George Michael tickets in the post, eh?
Perfect. I love George
Michael. I thought I was on pretty safe ground there. I thought you'd hate that too. You hate everything else. It's just one stream of complaint,
Nick,
with you, Bob.
I'd say to his face, I'd love to meet him. I'd say, Mr. Michael, I'll be honest with you, I don't approve your personal lifestyle, but that's entirely your business. I'm not a music fan of yours, but your politics are spot on, and I would die to defend George Michael's right to do whatever he wants to do, because he's not hurting anybody else except the neocons like Blair.
Right. I think if this call goes on any longer, I'm going to die. But thanks for the lecture,
it,
Bob.
Let's do it, old chap.
All right, cheers, mate. Ta-ta.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Cheer up. Good grief. Whew. Ian wouldn't have put that call on the air, would he?
Probably not for that long.
Here's one in the Rhondda. Hello, Rob.
From one cheerful call to
another. Not that long. I couldn't get a word in edgeways.
Well, that guy.
Yeah.
He was wonderful.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He's like him above your bed, speaking to you as you're going to sleep. Lovely voice. Anyway. My first question to you tonight. Today,
what's your query?
When you were at university, if you can remember that far back.
Yes.
Were you ever on a committee for anything?
No, the only thing I did, extracurricular, was the radio. In fact, that's pretty much the only thing I did while I was there. I didn't really work very much because I was doing a degree in psychology, and no one needs to know anything to pass that.
So who run your radio station? Students or you like...
It was a bloke called Derm Tanner.
Not him.
Yeah, the very same. Who I believe, last time I heard, well, it was just decades ago, he was running a BBC local radio station in Yorkshire or somewhere.
Is that low in his career or high?
I've got no idea.
Well, anyway, in my university, they can't be bothered to employ anybody, so they get the students to run it. And, of course, I'm on the committee.
What committee?
On the radio station committee. You've got to run it. An executive, we call it. Not like the Politburo yet. So, there's bitter infighting going on at the moment.
Oh, bound to be.
Yeah, and I think we might all have a fight tonight.
About?
About me, I think. They're accusing me of not doing my job.
Which is?
News editor.
A news editor on a student radio station?
Exactly. And they, do you know what they keep on saying? This is laughable, this is. They said, the station doesn't sound professional.
It's a student radio station.
You can't tell these people, they're thick. Anyway.
Do you have adverts?
Adverts, no, not allowed adverts.
Right, well then it's not a professional organisation, is it?
It's not professional, it's all a bunch of rubbish. Although the BBC do produce our jingles. Very nice of them.
What, with our money?
Ooh, perhaps I should have said that.
What do you mean they produce your jingles?
Well, the BBC have, like, a help the community kind of thing, which radio stations, like, student stations are.
Helping a bunch of drunken students to play at radio. Right, sing us one of your jingles now. You've got 7 seconds.
No.
Sing it.
We don't have a singing jingle.
How about Radio Luxembourg? There's one. I'll do it myself.
If you're tired...
London's LBC 97.3. 0870-9090-973. Nick Abbott.
A little while ago, I was talking about this survey from a company whose name I will not mention again, I refuse, which has suggested that driving a black cab in London is the most difficult and dangerous job in this country. And I asked Helen what the most dangerous job that she'd ever done was, and laughably, she said typing.
It's true. I hated it.
But it's not dangerous.
It was to me.
Why?
Because I hated it so much.
That you were a threat to yourself?
Yes.
Oh, well.
And I said that I was going to ask you, Chris, so you've had a long time to come up with something.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say dangerous, but probably the worst job was working for the fruit and veg section of a well-known supermarket.
Well, how is that? What's wrong with that?
Well, it's just physical labour.
Oh.
It's like lugging around bags of potatoes and, you know, these
You're being so thin and weedy.
Yeah, massive crates of, like, carrots and parsnips and...
Isn't it pathetic, ladies and gentlemen, the youth of today? What a giant shower they are.
But not also, there was, my responsibility was to look after the salad bar as well.
What, lugging around all those heavy lettuces?
Well, no, preparing it all.
Preparing it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. What, the actual mixed salads?
Well, yeah, exactly.
The things behind the cough shield?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't get it. Why would anybody buy that stuff?
Well, you know, someone has to prepare it. So
now, having prepared it, would you buy that stuff?
No. Not in a million years.
See? Because I'm guessing if you don't sell it that day, you don't throw it all away, right?
Oh, no. No.
It arrives back looking suspiciously... limp the next day.
It lasts a few days.
Yeah. Isn't that awful? And people who buy salads ready-made from supermarkets will have been touching them.
Yes.
Ugh.
I know.
With their clammy little hands.
Yes.
And sticking their heads under the cough guard to cough.
Yeah. But I had a bit of back pain as well, looking around all these potatoes as well.
Boo-hoo-hoo.
And, I had to keep going in and out this massive walk-in refrigerator, and, you know, that was freezing cold, and getting chapped hands and all that, and it just wasn't for me.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you.
That's all right.
Poor little baby.
Yeah, I know. Happens to the best of us, you know.
That is pathetic. People used to have to go up chimneys and, stick white-hot rivets into boats... and go down pit.
Well, bully for them.
And you're moaning about chopping up cucumber. That is weak.
But they chose to go up chimneys.
Yeah, that's right. That's all they dreamed of. Please, can I work to an early death around about 13 years old by sticking me up a chimney? That's what they used to say.
Oh, well. Maybe I'm just a victim of the times.
I think that kids today are, it's just an outrage. You don't know you're born, lad. In my day, it was 8 grand. I can't be bothered with that.
Thank God.
Here's one in High Wycombe. Hello, Tim.
Hello, matey. What is the matter with you lot, honestly?
Moan. The kids today, eh?
We got Chris moaning about lugging spuds around.
Weak.
We got you moaning about... going to the theatre and, you know, having walk out halfway through. What's his name talking about Madonna just before the break? What is it? We have to sort of ship out Prozac to everybody today, is it?
Let's pick ourselves up, dust ourselves down, and do it all over again.
As for jobs, I had a job in a mortuary where I had to prepare bodies for post-mortem, so that was my job when I was a student.
You what? A student of what?
Well, I actually took a year out at the end of school, and the only thing, I was in hospital radio at the time, and next to
hospital radio.
I know, yes indeedy. And next to the hospital radio, invariably as they always are, was the mortuary, and they were offering £6 an hour about 20 years ago to go and help out. And one of the things we do was to prepare bodies for the pathologist to come in, you know.
Without really making us feel iller than we already are,
yeah.
How do you prepare a body for...
I suspected heart attack, for instance, you need to remove the organ, which requires a lot of drilling and cutting to get through to it, you know, so it's a bit like a DIY case.
See, now, I would want that done by a trained professional, not just some oik who's just finished his shift on a radio station.
Yeah, well, times were hard, you know, times were hard. You know, you had to move on. Anyway, listen, the real reason I was going to say was, I know, it's a personal recommendation. I am not a Monty Python fan in any way, shape or form. It's okay, it's a bit funny, but, you know, it's sort of student-y humour, never used to really get into it. But I went to see Spamalot a couple of weeks ago, and I laughed until I absolutely cried. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Isn't it just a lot of rehashed old Monty Python sketches?
In the first half, there are a lot of references to Monty Python stuff, particularly the films and The Holy Grail. But it's quite funny, but in the second half, they make lots of references to the modern day, and there are some songs which you would never get in a Monty Python, definitely never get on the television, but it is actually quite incredibly funny. There's a lot of unexpected stuff going on there. And if you want, you know, have a drink beforehand, feel good stuff, turn up, and I don't think you'll walk out halfway through, I promise you.
Well, I may not walk out halfway through, but I think my bank manager will be on the phone straight away. Doesn't it cost £110 for two before you've even arrived?
No, I paid £45 for my ticket, including the booking fee. But I think where you do have a point is that these days, for £50, which I agree is about an average to go and see something, against, you know, £5-6 to go and see the cinema, £50 is a heck of a punt to take on something that you don't know that you're going to like.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't see clips of it on screen. You don't see it sort of build in the same way as, you know, big film stars going around. You see lots of clips on television.
Yeah, and there's no explosions or car chases, and they haven't spent £100 million on doing it.
Well, there's a couple of explosions in Spamalot, but, you know, and some very clever graphics and, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
And did you come out wanting to eat ham and jam and Spamalot?
Well, actually, there's a woman who walks around offering Spam sandwiches.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, but I didn't partake. I stuck to the ice cream because I know, you know, if it's wrapped, I know somebody hasn't had the fingers in it. Sort of thing.
Yes. Very wise. Yeah, plus, what goes in Spam, no one has any idea, including the company that makes it, I warrant. Anyway, thanks a lot, Tim.
Take care, matey.
Ta-da. This is LBC. Week Abbott. So you two modern-day weaklings in there, the most dangerous thing that you've ever done is one, typing, Helen, and you shower, polishing your tomatoes, and that's it.
Afraid so.
Weak.
Well, it's the modern day, isn't it? It's the modern day.
I think the most...
What have you done?
Well, I think the most dangerous thing I've ever done, which was flat-out stupid, and I can't believe I did it. I ran out of money when I was in America. And I showed up where people would hang around on the street and wait for construction work. And so I found myself being pushed through the hole of a heavily slanted roof on the top of a school, six stories up, and being told to rip the tiles off the roof and throw them over the side. Now, there was no scaffolding up there, and I wasn't tethered by a rope. I was just standing on these tiles that I was ripping up with six floors between me and, well, I might not have died, but it would have been inconvenient at the very least. Now, that was just flat-out silly.
All right, you win.
See? I'm a manly man, I am. Or just stupid, I think, is more likely.
Well, is that the most dangerous job or the worst job?
No, I think the worst job was working in a meat factory. It's this toss-up between working in a meat factory and working overnights in a bakery. Now, if you're working overnights in a bakery in France, for instance, it would be fantastic, because every gorgeous morsel that came out of the oven, you'd be having a little sample, right?
Perk of the job.
Yeah, exactly. But working in a bakery overnights in this country, just hideous, bland, beige tripe would just come out of the ovens, tray after tray after tray of it. And you wouldn't want to eat any of it, because none of it, not even when it's freshly baked, does any of it taste any good.
You never had a nibble?
Well, I did, but, you know, one nibble is plenty, because it just doesn't taste of anything. English bakeries, it's like, what's the point?
Cheese and onion pasta is nice.
It wasn't that kind of bakery.
Oh.
There were no savoury goods. It was all sweet.
Yeah.
Well, you don't like sweet?
Not from bakeries in this country, no.
No, well, just my point, yeah. But probably the most unpleasant job I've ever done was working in a meat factory, where one bloke lost a finger in a pie and didn't tell anybody.
Wow.
10,000 pies later...
Did they recall the pie?
The guy came around and said... Yeah, you wouldn't mind searching through these pies for some bloke's finger, would you? So we were taking trays of them and just going through the pastry and fiddling about.
You're making this up.
No, it's absolutely true. And the experience turned me vegetarian for 25 years, up to this point right now. So it was dangerous in that working in a meat factory... made me swear off meat.
Did you find the finger?
And that has made me the wan, weak, pasty-faced boy that you see before you today.
London's LBC 97.3.
Yeah.
0870 90 90 973. Nick Abbott.
Well, let's get back to it.
So I thought we'll do a, it's not screenless, it's,
Straight to air?
Straight to air.
Yeah.
No, what's his name? What's the thing called?
Oh, Triple M.
Triple M, yeah. Not that, but something quite like that. Mm. So, in other words, just finish this sentence. It's a lightning round, right? And because it's practically Christmas, if you go on the tube in the West End now, you've got people with this crazy look in their eyes. They're going insane. They're shopping so much, and it's just, it's taken people, they've gone nuts, they have. Don't go into the West End of London between now and February, and thank me later. All right. But because everyone is thinking about it, you're thinking about it, aren't you, Helen?
Yes.
I thought, because 'tis the season to be jolly, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
La.
Yeah. Then finish this sentence. I'd like, or I want. I'd like, I'd want. Everyone wants something, right? What do you want?
I want two tickets to Spamalot.
I'd like a Christmas bonus.
Right. Well, don't ask me.
Okay.
Ask Ian.
I'm barking up the wrong tree, am I?
Yeah, you certainly are, yeah. So it's 0870-9090-973. Just finish that sentence, I want, or I'd like. Well, I have to nail it down, one or the other. Which do you prefer? I'd like, I want. I want, yeah. Because there's no two ways about it. It's we demand at Christmas.
We need.
It's more than a need, it's a yearning.
Hmm.
It's an urge.
We're desperate. I'm desperate for
money.
Yeah.
Right. I want. Just finish that sentence. I want whatever it might be to you know, improve your little life. 0870-9090-973. And I'll get to that after this. Do you know Mike Reed? What a long career this guy's had. He must be 150 years old. He's turned down. Guess how much to go back to EastEnders? That's right, £100,000. How rich would you have to be just to turn down £100,000?
Very rich.
Indeed. He used to be on a thing called The Comedians. Can you remember back that far? Was he also on the Wheel Tappers and Shunters Social Club? Give order. Pardon? That's going back a little way before The Comedians. The Wheel Tappers and Shunters Social Club. Oh, yeah, it's a real quality programme on ITV. They loved it.
Wow.
But Mike Reed, he used to be a stand-up comedian, of course. He used to be a professional cockney. Well, I guess he still is.
Yep.
But he turned it down for for exactly the same reasons that that Desmond Lynham turned down continuing to do that show with the annoying tune.
Countdown.
Yeah. How anybody can sit there and watch that, I have no idea. He didn't like travelling. That was the reason.
He doesn't want to be there, does he, Dale? I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and it is just awful.
What,
he's bored, yeah.
Dizzy Dez?
Yeah, he's bored.
Well, yeah, it's a boring show to watch and do, I would imagine, but he gets paid a gigantic sum to sit there and do it.
Yeah,
I'd do it for £600,000 a year.
Yeah, but they film them all in, like, one day,
That's right.
Of course he's bored.
Well, yeah, but I'd be thrilled, though. You get to work a week for just one day. I mean, it's not much of a job, is it? It's just got to sit there and...
Read.
I don't even know what he does.
Well, it's all scripted for you, isn't it, as well?
See, that's beyond my ability to understand. Someone who can turn down £600,000 just because apparently they can't be bothered to drive 3 hours up the motorway.
I know.
I mean,
get a train.
Earning that kind of money, he could get a helicopter. He could be there in half an hour.
Exactly.
So he must really hate that job.
I thought he'd finished that, but now.
And who won that? It's not Michael Aspel, it's somebody else, wasn't it? Some other... it was Des.
Oh, was it?
Des O'Connor.
Des.
Swapped one Des for the next, so that thereby saving money on name badges. But Mike Reed has turned down £100,000 to go back on EastEnders, and £100,000 does sound a lot, but you know what? If you earn £100,000, you spend £100,000. And to be that famous, to be on TV... Because EastEnders is on virtually every day, isn't it?
4-5 days a week? 5 days a week.
Isn't that amazing? With a plus a thing at the weekend. I think they only take Saturday off.
Yeah.
So you're really in people's living rooms on a daily basis, more so than people's wives and husbands, right? But to be that famous and only have £100,000 coming in a year...
Yeah, but the thing is...
That means that you can't insulate yourself from the general public.
But that £100,000 isn't, you know, after tax, is only, like, what, £50,000?
£60,000. 40%.
40.
Can you take 40% off 100?
Thinking.
40% off 100 is... 50. Yeah, you're right.
Well, I'm not in that tax bracket, so I don't know the exact.
Yeah, 40%. Trust me. But it doesn't... It sounds like a lot of money, but it really isn't. Because you can't, like I said, insulate yourself from the general public. And the thing with being famous and not gigantically wealthy... See, the Beckhams don't understand this, because they live in their own little bubble world. Everywhere they go, they're surrounded by security guards, and they've got cars driving them hither, thither and yon, and private jets, and this, that and the other. That's acceptable, to be that famous and that rich. But if you're famous and you're not rich, then you will be travelling on public transport every now and again, because 100,000 minus the amount that Gordon takes isn't going to get you a lot of private cars, is it?
No.
It's not going to get you a private jet. You're going to be forced to slum it with the rest of us. And there the troubles begin.
Unless he's going into retirement.
Well, no, apparently he wants to do other work. He said... This is the story. The actor who played Frank Butcher has been approached 4 times to resume the role. If somebody offered me 100 grand 4 times, I think I'd take it once, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
The 66-year-old insists he will never return because he got stuck on the M25 for 4.5 hours while filming once.
That's made up. That's got to be
made
up.
That's what he says.
That's crazy.
His... Just the way he said that, Helen. Like you were listening to something else. His agent said he has had repeated offers to go back, but he just won't do it. That period of his life is over. The last time he filmed for them, he got stuck on the motorway for 30 minutes. He rang me and said, I now know why I left that very bad word show. Never again, he said. 4.5 hours. I mean, 4.5 hours is a round trip on the tube in and out of work, isn't it?
Pretty much.
And much more unpleasant than the carriage that was sent to pick him up. So that just seems a bit, oh, I don't know, showbiz lovers. It's a good job that we don't have any of that kind of that kind of carryings on going on in radio.
Yeah.
We're so down to earth in radio. No lovers here,
no,
darling.
No egos here.
Exactly. So anyway, we're going to go for what's happening now?
We've got ads.
First ads, then travel.
News.
No news.
No news.
No,
right.
No ads.
Then news.
Then news, then ads. It's all too complicated. I can't cope, darling.
If you suck...
Hey, Colin.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello, Nick. Good evening to you.
Yes, Colin.
I was going to respond to you about the Mike Reed turning down the money.
Yes.
I mean, the actors who are struggling for work have to go in the jungle, because their careers are going down the Swanee. So they go in the jungle to get publicity.
Yeah.
And, because they're struggling, otherwise they wouldn't go in the jungle. And with Mike Reed, I think there's more to it than it is, because he's not the type of guy who would turn 100 grand down. Because my dad, God rest his soul, used to say, half a slice of something is better than nothing. And if he were to pay tax, he wouldn't turn 50. There's more to it.
I think there's more to it than Desmond Lynham doesn't like the trip. There's got to be more to it than that. Turning down 600 grand. I mean, how rich is Desmond Lynham? I mean, he used to work for the BBC, and only Jonathan Ross earns that kind of money that he would want to turn 600 grand. Like, he wouldn't even get out of bed for 600 grand. Jonathan Ross wouldn't do one 3-hour radio show a week for that.
And the BBC ain't the greatest payers in the world either.
They what?
They're not the best of payers, are they?
Well, like I said, it depends who you are.
Yeah, they don't like paying.
No, but no one likes paying.
But they
out of them.
Nobody would turn that type of money down. There's more to it.
All right, well, I'll delve further. All right, Colin.
All right, my friend. Have a lovely evening.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Maybe it's got something to do with those numbers that are being read out at the end of the radio dial. On what channel is that, by the way? Is that FM or AM or... I guess I wasn't really listening to what she was saying.
Shortwave,
of course it is. Yeah, what's that then?
Helen's the engineer.
No. it's a short little
wave.
Radio that's
a short
wave.
One, is it?
It's smaller than long.
Mm-hmm.
wave and, right. and fatter than medium.
Right, about how big? Put up your hands.
Oh, probably about... It starts off that.
Yeah.
And then it probably goes to about that big.
Wow.
Right. That is really big.
We're looking at 10 inches.
We've all got access to it, so it's not a problem.
You what?
The shortwave.
We've got access to it.
To the shortwaves, yeah.
What does that mean?
We can all go and listen to those numbers if we want. We just need to buy a shortwave radio.
And we'll probably be waved to death by the time that we do, because all of these radio waves are entering our bodies and going straight through them. We've got no idea what it's doing to us, do we? We've got the microphone, the mobile phone masts.
Yeah.
We've got those decked phones. I've got no idea what a decked, what decked stands for. But you know those cordless phones that you wander around your ass with?
Oh, yeah.
If you've got one of those in your house, apparently it's, it's almost as bad as having a mobile phone mast
really?
In your house. Yeah, I took them all out.
Wow.
I went back to wired phones. And now, of course, everything, almost everything that you will buy shortly that is plug-in-able will be always on Wi-Fi connected. Cables will be a thing of the past. And this will be another thing that will kill us. Is there a single thing about modern life that won't actually kill you really dead?
I blame the cows.
The cows?
Yeah.
Bound to be their fault. Out of his mind. You know that today is the unluckiest day of the year?
No.
This day, right here.
What?
And I was thinking this as I was driving in, because I forgot my mobile phone. And I thought, if I have an accident, I won't be able to tell anybody.
Who said it was the unluckiest day of the year?
I read it in the newspaper.
Oh, it must be true.
Today is the unluckiest day of the year, an insurance company has revealed. An insurance company that wants us to read its name out on the air to get free advertising. Analysis of 1 million claims that Britons have more accidents today, November the 27th, than on any other day of the year.
Well, I'm doing all right so far.
Ian Lee's had several small personal accidents during the course of the day, that's why he's not in. Pouring out of him it is, poor boy. Have you checked up during the course of this show on how he is?
No.
Have you called your chum, huh?
No. I'll send him a text later.
Yeah,
to see
sure
how he
you
is.
Will. Mm-hmm. Do you ever communicate? Aren't you mates?
Yeah.
Well,
he texted me this morning telling me he wasn't coming in today.
Right, and undoubtedly you sent him, a basket of fruit, something like that? A little card saying, hope you're feeling better, some flowers, something like that, was it?
No, I sent him a text back saying, I can't believe you're skiving.
Right. See, that's blokes, Helen. Isn't that awful? We make me sick.
I sent
we
some flowers.
We just don't care. Well, I believe that you would have done.
Yeah, I did.
If you could have been bothered. If you knew that he was ill before you came on,
yep.
you'd have done something nice like that. Send him a box of chocolates or, like, a bucket, something like that.
Well, if he's caught what I had last week, then yeah. I know he's not properly ill, but he's just, you know, got too much of a cold to speak on the radio.
Yes. Well, when I think the first show that I did here, I actually lost my voice more than I've ever done in my whole life, such that I had to stop the show halfway
wow.
through. I think I wasn't the very first, it was the second show. I actually had
that's
to...
dramatic.
Well, yeah. Somebody had to put a tape on, and I had to leave because no sound was coming out of my mouth.
Wow. Do you still get paid for the whole show, though?
I did, yeah. Well, I asked politely about that. I said, you know, I was perfectly prepared to get paid, you know, but for all the minutes that I did. But they were nice enough to pay me for the whole lot.
Excellent.
How about that? I could stop right now and probably charge them for the full 3.5 hours.
Of course.
The analysis of 1 million claims today, November 27th, the most unlucky day of the year. Claims in previous years. Now this is where the sun falls down on this story, because you think they'd come up with a lot of amusing claims that insurance companies have had, you know, and there's no end of those, right? This is what they came up with. This must have been just like an inch or so gap in the newspaper, and I couldn't think of anything else to, you know, to make up.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's a Monday. They probably have the work experience people work on a Sunday, and this is why Monday papers are so thin. Claims made in previous years include a man who put his foot through the ceiling while getting his Christmas baubles out.
Fair enough.
Well, that's kind of amusing, because
yeah.
baubles, there's something funny about baubles, eh?
Yeah, they had to squeeze that in.
And a woman's pet started a house blaze by knocking over a candle. That's not very funny.
No, it's quite serious.
So
it's the unluckiest day of the year, and it's Banana Day as well.
Well, I named it Banana Day, yeah.
Okay.
And 007, the new Bond movie, is the most successful Bond movie in history, apparently, like in its opening weekend.
You look a bit like,
Yeah, of course I do.
Don't you?
Who?
You do, look at him.
Oh, yeah.
Craig.
I look like James Bond.
Guy.
I look like James Bond.
You do, right?
What?
Now. Yeah.
Is it because I look like I could spring through the glass? My coiled body could launch myself through the glass and throttle you with one hand?
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, I dealt up some of these calls with another. I look like I could deal death at a moment's notice.
Yes.
And then not feel any remorse whatsoever.
You just look like him.
Yeah, right.
You do.
Even when I've not got my clothes on, we look almost identical. Yeah. People gasp as I come out of the sea in my clingy shorts.
Lovely. I'd pay to see that.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
You'd pay for a blindfold. You liar. It's a great film. It's, but a lot of people are saying that it's nasty.
Have you seen it, Nick?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Nasty, they're saying. Sadistic, they're saying. Violent. I loved it.
It's a 12.
All of those things. It's a 12.
Certificate.
12A or just a 12? Oh.
What's the difference between 12 and 12A?
12A, you need an adult with you.
What difference could that possibly make? The tiny little child's eyeballs have been seared by all this horrific ultra-violence, and because they got some... because they brought their older brother, it's not going to affect them anymore.
But hopefully the adult can explain a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's not actually getting his privates mashed.
Yes.
By a man with a rope.
It's all pretend.
Yeah, right. So when you wake up at night screaming your face off, all you have to do is remember that, you know, this awful film that scarred you mentally for the rest of your life, it was actually all just pretend. Yeah, that'll help. Okay. Sticking a little A on after 12, yeah. Who are they kidding?
I know.
It's just that they didn't want to make it 18 because that would restrict the amount of people who could go in and see it, thereby losing the company money. So they just capitulated and bent over backwards in order to do anything they could to these multinational organisations that run things. Very suspicious.
Was there ever a rating 21? Does that ever exist, or did I imagine that?
There's an X. It wasn't X 21.
I don't remember X.
You don't remember X?
No.
Oh, I guess not, no.
Remember the triangle?
Yes. As you were flipping around the TV channel, I think, wasn't it Channel 4?
Yeah.
And you were flipping around and you didn't know what film it was on, but it had a pink triangle on it, then you knew that this was, it wasn't a warning that you should quickly change the channel, which is what they were suggesting it was. Very cleverly, they gave a warning to any teenagers who happened to be channel surfing at the time, that this was a channel on which you wanted to stop. Because you might just by chance see some... which, of course, was very likely it being Channel 4 at the time.
They don't give you that sort of heads-up anymore.
No, they don't. Well, nobody watches the television for rudery anymore because they're busily downloading it on their pewters, eh?
Of course.
And transferring it to their video iPods.
Yes. And watching it on the tube.
On the tube, yes. Awful.
Eating their bananas.
Sideways. Surprising those nice ladies and gentlemen that would come down in their coaches from the north in order to go shopping at Selfridges or whatever it is they do. With their little ruddy complexions. Having such fun they are. Meanwhile, Londoners are grumbling and moaning and staring at the floor and just shocked that anyone would be talking on the tube. Awful. Anyway, I'll tell you what I want for Christmas.
Hmm?
What I want for Christmas is me two front teeth. Yeah. That'll do.